Hey everybody, it's episode 335 of PodQuest.
Hey!
It's Wednesday, January 20th, 2020. I am Chris, with me is Druten.
2021.
Fuck, yeah, you're right, thank you. Richie?
Yep, I'm here.
How you guys doing?
Alright.
You know.
All things considered.
Better day today than it's been in 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the most part.
I mean, in certain ways. Like, obviously, there's still a pandemic, the world still sucks, but there's like a bright little corner of it now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was, I turned on the news, the live coverage on Hulu, the second I set up my desk for work, so at 8 o'clock, and I got to watch The Orange Man, whom I'm going to take a hint from Stephen Colbert, who does not say his name anymore. I got to see The Orange Man fly away.
Yeah, I watched the coverage of that. I listened to his shitty speech. He let his wife talk for the first time in 4 years. She said like four whole words, and he bragged about things he didn't really do, and then they got on a plane and flew away.
Yeah, I loved when he said, "We will be back," because I saw some people post on Facebook, "Yeah, he will, yeah, he will." And I replied, "Yeah, for his trials, for his impeachment trials, he will be back."
Yeah, because even, so I know I saw like McConnell like openly stated that he feels that Trump provoked the attacks and everything on the 6th,
mm-hmm.
which like puts them in like a weird position where like if the Republicans seem like they're going to lean towards convicting him, like McConnell can claim that he was all on board, but like he didn't say he incited the whole thing. So if they don't convict him, he can just walk that back, be like, well, I think he did provoke people, but like he didn't directly create the violence.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what those pieces of shit do.
Yes. And real quick, before we get into the news, I don't know how much of the inaugurations you guys watched or anything, but can we quickly talk about how Mitch McConnell puts his face mask over his glasses as well?
I actually didn't see that, but that's very funny.
Yeah, there was, which fogs up your glasses more. So if any of you are wearing glasses and your face mask is over your glasses, maybe that's why it's fogging up. But yeah, he was sitting there and his, like, part of his face mask was covering over the bottoms of his glasses. I'm like, you don't need to protect your glasses that much, dude.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. That guy just doesn't seem all that intelligent.
No. It's a surprise a turtle can hold office for 14
Terms.
That's it. Yes.
Yo, you know what's actually even crazier? This was only the 59th fucking inauguration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it was 232 years ago, but there's only been 59 of them.
Yeah.
That's weird to think about that.
Yeah, I get it. I can get it.
But yeah, otherwise, it's Wednesday, right? Yeah, it's Wednesday.
Yes.
Yeah. Also, that whole 2020 thing at the top, I just noticed yesterday, so, For comics, I create a Google Doc each week with like what books there are to pick up, just so like I can keep track of it, so I know kind of like what's in my pull list, if there's anything that like is in my pull list, so like I should definitely go that week to pick books up.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized for the last 3 weeks I have dated them all 2020. So I had to go back and rename all of them. Well, I mean, it was only three of them, but I still had to go back and rename three of them today. Yeah.
Good thing you caught that before it was like halfway through the year, or you bought more comics.
Or like I happen to sort the, because I've got, let's see how many of these documents are in this folder. So I've been doing this for a long time. It goes back to, still going, Jesus, 2013. So yeah. So I've got a document a week every week since November of 2013.
Damn.
Yeah, and if I ever like hit like the sort by and like changed it to like the date or something like that, it would it'd be a little bit of a mess.
Oh yeah, I can, mm-hmm. I can get that.
Yeah, where's the outline? There's the outline. So I honestly, I guess since I mentioned comics, this is as good as a segue as any. It was announced yesterday that in April Venom is going to hit its 200th issue.
Mm-hmm.
That's cumulative because comic books are stupid and they renumber them sometimes.
Yes.
But it'll be the 200th solo issue of Venom across like it's his different series over the years. It's also going to be the final issue with Donny Cates and Ryan Stegman, who have been on the book since 2018, and that's kind of a bummer, at least for like comic book fans. Like, they're both really good. They've done a lot of cool things with the book. They've changed like the mythology around Venom over the last 3.5 years or so. Mm-hmm. Like, to the point where, like, the symbiotes have a god now, and the god is basically all-powerful.
Okay.
And, like, Cates has been seeding that character through a bunch of other books that he's worked on, too. So he, like, he's kind of made his own little, like, corner of the universe, basically, in Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan Stegman's just one of the best artists at Marvel, like he has been for years. But yeah, they're going to wrap up their run with issue 200. They both teased that they're going to be working on another project together with Marvel, but they're not saying what that is yet. But it's kind of a bummer because the Venom comics are very hit or miss, especially like over the last few years. The initial, when they first put Flash Thompson in like the Venom run, like where he became Agent Venom for a handful of years.
Yeah.
That was really good up until he went to space. And then when he went to space and joined the Guardians, his solo series, like, it wasn't bad, but it just felt weird. Because, like, Flash was always, like, a Spider-Man side character. And him being, like, a former soldier that lost his legs in combat, and also, like, Spider-Man's biggest fan, like, it worked. Him being sort of, like, the government Spider-Man. It didn't quite work as well, him being the space Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there was, like, a good gap where when there was a Venom book, like, it was kind of not great. And then these guys came over and made Venom good again.
Yeah.
And now we're going to go back to, like, maybe not having a Venom book, maybe not having a good Venom book.
Yeah, I don't know. You kind of just have to hope for the best. Like what these two built over the past couple of years, like, hopefully they keep that going and, like, don't just completely, absolutely tarnish it and ruin everything that's been done.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a 50-50 shot, because people will come in and just, you know, they'll pitch what they think should happen next, and if the editors go for it, that's what'll happen.
Yeah.
That's how we had eras where Matt Gargan, who's historically the Scorpion for Spider-Man, was also Venom for a while, and he was a really shitty Venom.
Yeah.
And there was also, like, some criminal dude that, honestly, like, between Flash and Eddie Brock becoming Venom again, like, in the last few years, there was this other guy whose name I don't even remember that was Venom for a little while. Do you guys remember The Darkness? It was a 360 game from, like, the early 360.
Okay, yeah.
No, I only remember the band The Darkness, because I believe in a thing called love.
That you'll never get.
Oh. Probably not.
Probably. No, but so it was, like, it was a first-person shooter on the Xbox in the... or 2005-ish. Like, it was an early title. There was a sequel to it. It's based on an Image comic.
Wow, it had a sequel?
Yeah. So, it's based on a comic series from Image that went for 15-ish years.
Okay.
Actually, longer than that. Almost 20, probably. I think it ran from, like, the mid-90s until, like, the mid-2010s. But that's kind of what that guy reminded me of. He reminded me of the guy from The Darkness. Like, kind of like a low-level, like, mob goon. That was also just, like, a complete sociopath that got the symbiote and just treated it like shit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind... I don't know. That's kind of the... I never read The Darkness, but that's the vibe I got from the game.
Yeah.
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 So, yeah. Hopefully Venom can keep going good. King in Black is running right now. It's really good. It's kind of like the swan song for these two, since they're both working on that right now. And then Stegman will go back to Venom for the final issue, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But they are going to be talking about it, about, like, the whole Venom run, apparently, in a little bit more detail. This week on Ryan Stegman's podcast, Stegman and His Amazing Friends.
Nice.
And that's a fun comic book podcast if you just want to hear, like, comic book creators kind of talk about, like, the behind-the-scenes sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Also, there was one episode of it where Cates actually had a really cool Keanu Reeves story.
There's one, I talked about this in the past, there's one comic book podcast I want to listen to. It's the Marvel Method. It's Method Man and somebody else. And Method Man talking with somebody else about comics, like a different guest each time. But it's only on, like, Sirius Radio.
It's one of those things?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I hate that. It's the same thing with, like those podcasts that sign, like, the exclusive deals with, like, Spotify. It's like,
yeah.
Like, I don't, like, use Spotify. I'm not going to start using Spotify, especially not for a podcast.
Like the Joe Rogan Experience. It's now specifically only on Spotify.
I mean, I don't listen to that crap anyway.
I know a few people that do. I've never really found him entertaining except for during Fear Factor. So
I was going to say, he was really good on Fear Factor. Some of his stand-up was all right. But, like, the clips I've seen from his show, like, he's a fine interviewer. Like, and he gets a pretty wide plethora of guests on, but
yeah,
it was just never my thing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that wide plethora of guests also includes some real giant fucking shitheads that he gives.
That is true.
Yeah. Like the founder of the Proud Boy.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yep.
And Elon Musk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, Drew, you got a Spider-Man Miles Morales, and you've been playing it on your new OLED.
Yeah, I actually finished it on Monday.
Nice. Nice. What'd you think about it?
It was pretty good. The combat kind of wore on me real fast. It's the Batman combat.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's part of, like, it's Spider-Man, so, like, they didn't really change the combat too much, but it also, it was a good combat, so it makes sense not to change it.
You played 2018 Spider-Man?
No.
Okay.
I debated which one to play first. I bought the $70, get both of them.
Probably should have played 2018.
Eh. I felt like, well, I mean, probably, but whatever. Like, it's, yes, it's a sequel, but it's also not.
So even without the sequel part of it, it's kind of like playing Arkham City before Arkham Asylum. I haven't played Miles yet, but from between what Richie said and what I've heard, like, other places, they really refined, like, the controls and the combat and just the flow of it, where, like, Spider-Man might feel like worse to you now?
Yeah, after like an hour or two of playing, I was like, man, I probably should have played the first Spider-Man, because I feel like going back to it is probably going to suck.
Yeah, because it's kind of like...
Or I just wish I bought just Miles Morales.
Yeah, because the first Spider-Man game was really good, but I can see, like, if it's anything like it was like Arkham Asylum to Arkham City, where there were just like those quality of life improvements just over just the combat, the movement through the city and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if the combat in this got worn on you in the, what, 5 hours that it took you to beat the game? 5 to 6 hours it took you to beat the game?
Probably something like that.
The 2018 Spider-Man is 2 to 3 times as long. So.
Yeah. We'll see.
If you do everything. Like, if you just mainline the story and only do the side stuff when you absolutely have to, you could probably get it done in, like, 10 hours or so.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably.
We'll see if I get around to it. I'm sure I will at some point, but
worst case scenario, play it on easy mode just for the story, because this is a really, really good story.
Yeah.
I mean, and frankly, if you wait long enough, like, you're gonna forget exactly how Miles played, and it won't be as jarring to play, like, the slightly unrefined version of it.
Yeah, true. But Miles Morales was good. And the reason I chose to play that first was it was slightly newer, newer and, like, more built for the PS5 than...
Hey, man, they replaced an entire actor's face so that it would run better on PS5.
Yeah. That's true.
it is a different-looking Pete.
But, I enjoyed it. The story was so predictable, Sarah predicted it, like, the first time you meet the one character. Like...
And
5 seconds.
The good thing about that is they don't loom that over your head too long.
Oh, yeah. They basically 20 minutes later go, oh, yeah, no, you were right. to think that. Which was good. Like, if they had waited way longer to make that reveal, it would have felt worse.
Exactly.
But no, it was pretty much like the next story mission. It was like, oh, no, you were right to think that. It looked really, really cool, though. Especially the nighttime stuff, especially on that OLED. Like, I was able to play it. I played it on the high fidelity setting, which is what it defaults to. So it's 30 frames per second with as many pedestrians as I can put in, plus all the particle effects on, plus ray tracing.
Mm-hmm.
They apparently, when it first came out, didn't have a 60 frame mode with ray tracing, which they've patched in. But apparently that really lowers density of the pedestrians.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about that on the Game of the Year stuff for Giant Bomb, right?
Yeah, but...
I thought that's where I heard that.
But yeah, like, it looked really fucking good.
It does. It looks really good. Like, and I'm not even using, like, a fancy new TV. I'm using my TV that I've had for 4 years. Like, and I'm just like, this looks amazing. Just imagine if I had an awesome...
Yeah, this TV is really fucking good.
What brand was it again?
I got the LG CX C10.
Nice.
Like I.
So you got like a good one.
Yeah. I saved the money and splurged on basically the best tea you can buy on the market.
Is it one of those like paper thin ones?
Dude, like, so minus the bottom half where like all the electronics actually are, the top half is like half an inch thick or some shit. It's very, very, very thin.
Yeah, that's
like,
wild.
I thought, like, you have a fairly thin tea, don't you? Like, isn't yours...
Yeah, I mean, it's... I'd say it's thin, but, like, it's definitely not that thin.
I will send a picture after, like, from the side of the TV to you guys. And, like, it barely exists. It's crazy.
So I think the way that the LG does theirs is, like you said, like, they put all of the electronic components, like, in a compartment kind of, like, on the lower side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, my Sony that I have downstairs, the whole back has a cover on it that... when you take it off, it's just empty space. There's just the three boards in there that actually power the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's like... And, like, honestly, those boards are usually near the bottom and all kind of grouped together anyway. So I'm not sure what they do that, like, LG just, like, refined to make the TV so thin at the top and not be, like, a full case.
So it's the technology for OLEDs, which was invented in Princeton, New Jersey, by the way.
Oh.
Is a thing I just found out. So an OLED TV is not backlit like a standard LED, which is how, and each pixel individually turns on it. So that's how the blacks on OLEDs get so black. It's not a pixel that's
dark,
backlit and darkened. It is just off entirely. So it really stands out. Like when I play Tetris Effect on it, like, cause that game is in a lot of the levels, it's black backgrounds with just bright colored effects popping off, and holy shit, like that was amazing looking.
Well, that's pretty
OLEDs,
cool.
They're really fucking cool.
Yeah, like that whole technology is just really fucking neat.
Mm-hmm.
They're just they are still a little too expensive.
It's on sale for $1,349 for the 55-inch.
I mean,
right
that's
it's
a lot
still
of money
a lot.
Still,
yeah. Like
if I didn't just have to get a loan to replace my heater, I probably would buy it.
So the funny thing was, so we went to Costco last Thursday to buy it, and while I'm there, because they had them in store, like I was originally just going to buy it through them online, because they give an extended warranty for 3 years for free, so I have 5 years of warranty on this TV, but online was sold out, so went to the store, and I'm looking at it, and the guy there is like, they're going to go on sale tomorrow. They really didn't. Well, they wound up going on sale on Sunday, although maybe in store started on Friday and online started Sunday. But I was like, well, I'm here now. But Costco, if any shit goes on sale there within 30 days of when you bought it, they're real good about giving you the matching the price and
well, that's cool.
Refunding you the difference. So on Monday we went up and I was like, hey, I bought this on Thursday and it's $100 cheaper now.
Yeah.
And they're like, here you go. Here's your $107.
Nice.
Did you guys did you guys sign up for a Costco like membership, or did you just get like a free month of it or something?
No, we signed up for it last March or April when Sarah was trying to get a Switch. And like there was one day where my one friend was like, hey, the Costco has Switches in, or I saw somewhere that Costco had them. And like she signed up, and in the time it took her to sign up and get that done, the Switch that was in our cart was
that does suck.
But
you saw, well, because I know they like just recently opened that Costco over in Cherry Hill, and I think that's the closest one to us.
Yeah, I mean, there's been one in Mount Laurel for a long ass time.
But that one's kind of far away.
Yeah,
compared to Cherry Hill, at least.
Yeah, the Cherry Hill one's definitely closer, but it wasn't like the next closest one was like North Jersey or some shit. Like,
that's
that
true.
Mount Laurel one is reasonable. Drive, it's like 25 minutes, 15.
Yeah, that's not wrong, but I don't know, 25 minutes to get groceries is a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
But how much money do you save on getting those groceries?
Honestly, for us, not that much, because we, like all their shit's bulk, so like we would spend the same amount of money, we just wouldn't go as often, and then half of it would go bad and we'd have to go again.
Yeah, true. I've never gone to Costco. I also drive far away to Wegmans for food shopping instead of the ShopRite that's two blocks from my house.
No, I drive to Wegmans too. That ShopRite is straight garbage.
It is. It sucks.
Like, what? I bought a loaf of bread there 2 weeks ago because, like, we literally ran out of bread, like, middle of the week. And the bread was already, like, the bread said it was good for, like, another 2 weeks. It was already stale.
Yeah.
And, like, I won't buy meats from them at all. The only thing I will get there is if we're doing, like, tacos or something like that, I'll get the already peeled, deveined shrimp.
Yeah.
Just because Wegmans doesn't seem to sell that, like, in their seafood, like, case.
Yeah.
You can buy frozen, but I don't need a $30 bag of frozen shrimp. I need, like, 12 just raw shrimp.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I run into that problem whenever I want to make wings, because Wegmans doesn't have the Purdue frozen chicken wings. And like, I haven't been able to find ones that I like over at Wegmans, so I just go to ShopRite, and I'm like, all right, I'll get this party pack of small wings.
Yeah, but, like, at least that's Purdue, so, like, that's coming from another company. Like, anything that ShopRite does on its own, like, all of their meats are awful.
Yeah. I only ever shop at that ShopRite if it's, like, an emergency or I don't feel like going to Wegmans. Like, if it's for one thing or, like, well, you know what? I want to have cheesesteaks today, so I'll go real quick, grab the sliced meat, and that's it. Like,
yeah, which I get that, because it is, like, Wegmans is far enough away, busy enough all the time. It's not worth that, like, 15-minute drive to get one thing.
Yeah, to get that impulse buy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely get that, but... Yeah. Yeah, otherwise, yeah, I would much... And I think, Drew, you guys go to, like, a ShopRite closer to you guys, right?
Yeah, usually we go to the ShopRite in West Deptford.
Yeah, which I think is owned by a different, like, person.
I can't remember.
Yeah, because I know the person that owns this Brooklawn one owns another one, but I don't think it's West Deptford.
No, I don't think Brown owns anything, or I don't think Brown owns West Deptford. It might be,
No, West Deptford... no, West Deptford is...
Sally.
Oh, well, real quick, while we're talking about just shitty places to buy things, that new Domino's they just opened where that Verizon reseller used to be?
Uh-huh.
I mean, Domino's is already straight shit. That one's even worse.
How is it worse than a standard Domino's?
So, I like two things from Domino's. I like their thin crust pizza.
Uh-huh.
And cheesy bread.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, like, it's not like either one of those things is especially good. But, like, you can't get like, thin crust pizza like that really anywhere else.
Okay.
Like, have you guys ever had their thin crust pizza?
No.
It's basically pizza on, like, crackers. Like, it's actually super thin crust and, like, it's cut into, like, little squares.
That's basically all the only kind of pizza I ever get.
Oh, right, because you have to get all the gluten-free crust, so it's weird. But, like, they're square. Like, they're never in circles.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they're generally not bad. I ordered from this one, they gave me a regular fucking pizza, not a thin crust, so I ordered online, which means all they fucking had to do was read a slip. There was no, like, error in communication. Yeah. The slip says thin crust pizza. So instead I got one of their shitty fucking round pizzas. You know how they, like, brush their, crust with, like, that garlic salt and whatever the fuck else they put on that stuff?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It tasted like and smelled like they actually just dunked it in that stuff. The cheesy bread was so oily, I actually had to dump it out. Like dump the liquid off the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was fucking disgusting. Normally when we order pizza, I'll have, like, two slices, depending on, like, the size of the pizza. I ate half of one slice and then threw it away, and the rest of the pizza's in the fridge because Erica didn't want to just trash it.
Yeah.
Like, it was the worst pizza it was the worst, like, chain pizza I've ever fucking had. And chain pizza is usually pretty fucking bad.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, it's a shame, because I like cheesy bread once in a while.
Just make it yourself.
That's work that I don't want to do.
It's literally, you buy breadsticks, you buy Italian seasoning, you buy butter, and you buy mozzarella cheese. And then garlic. And you just put it all on top of itself and throw it in the oven. It's not that much work.
No, that's definitely work that I don't think that you've ever quite grasped. I actually really fucking hate cooking. Like, I do it because I have to, but I absolutely fucking hate it. Like, I hate being in the kitchen. I hate making food.
Something wrong with you.
If I had the money to just order food every single meal of every single day, I would do it.
Something wrong with you. Cooking's amazing.
No, it is the biggest fucking waste of time. you spend 3 fucking hours in a kitchen, you take 30 seconds to fucking eat something.
Eat slower!
I do. Even when I eat slower, it doesn't take that long to fucking eat a plate of food.
But also, the 3 hours that you're in there cooking shouldn't be making just one goddamn meal. It's not breakfast. You're not making breakfast all the time.
I also don't like leftovers.
Oh my god, you're the worst person in the world.
Look who's talking.
What do you mean?
You're pretty much awful at everything.
I'm not. I made 4 pounds of chili, and I've been eating nothing but chili since Monday night.
So something like that, yes, but like, so you figure, I eat meat, Erica doesn't. So our meals are always more complicated because we have to cook everything separately.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to cook 8 pieces of chicken and eat one dried out fucking piece of chicken every day because it sat in the fridge.
Why don't you just stop eating meat then?
Because I like meat. I don't like the vegetarian meats.
Those vegetarian meats are incredibly hit or miss.
Like, I've tasted, the Impossible, like, beef stuff actually isn't bad. It's kind of expensive, but it's not bad. But, like, those, like the fake chicken cutlets and stuff like that are just, they're not good.
Mm-hmm. This is a thing that always, like, drives me a little off the wall when it comes to, like, vegetarian cooking, vegetarian eating. Like, when you think vegetarian cooking and eating, why do you always think you have to eat, like, the vegetarian chickens and bacons and stuff? Why not make a full vegetable meal that's actually really good instead of using these processed vegetarian fake meats that aren't going to be good?
What part of I hate cooking didn't fucking register?
I'm not saying to you, I'm just saying in general, your wife cooks.
So I actually cook most of the time because I can stop working earlier than she can. Like, she doesn't get done work until close to 5:30 a lot of times. And if, like, when she's back in the office, she'll be getting home, like, even later than that. And so rather than us eating at 8 o'clock, like, I get dinner done by the time, like, she's home or coming upstairs.
Just gotta get good. You know what? Just get good at cooking and you'll
enjoy
cooking.
I'm not bad at cooking per se. I just really, really don't like doing it.
Worst kind of person. People who hate cooking are the worst people.
I like eating. I hate cooking. You also have to remember, like, I'm a super picky eater, and a lot of recipes call for things that I just don't like. So we'll do, like, the Home Chef and stuff like that, and I usually just suffer through having to eat, like, something with onion in it.
How do you not like onion?
I fucking despise onion.
You're 35, and you don't like onion?
I'm 34, and no, I do not like onion.
Knowing whether or not you like something is different than if he had said, I've never eaten an onion. That would be like, okay, yes, yell at him for never having tried onion. But if he doesn't like it, he doesn't fucking like it. I hate cilantro. I fucking hate it.
See, there's a difference between onion and cilantro, though. Cilantro is not a core, like, flavoring ingredient.
And onion shouldn't be a core flavoring ingredient either. They're fucking disgusting.
Onions are, like, a major flavoring ingredient. You get a lot of flavor out of onions in pretty much everything you cook.
So here's my problem. So there's, obviously, there are different types of onion. I can deal with, like a white or a yellow onion if it's, like a small portion, like, caramelized or, like, just at least cooked down pretty far. Mm-hmm. I can't do red onion at all. Red onion is horrendous, whether it's cooked or... And I also cannot do raw onion. But
Sarah's kind of that way, too.
But, like, I still don't like any of it. Like, when I go to, like... If I go to McDonald's on that rare occasion, I always ask for no onions, and the fucking morons always give me fucking... just a fucking slop pile of onion on it. Like, I don't understand how you can have a slip on an item that tells you what it has, and it says... fucking capital letters, no onions, and there's literally so many onions that they're on the outside of the fucking bun.
So, as someone who worked at McDonald's for that long, I'm not going to comment on the insane amount of onions that go on your sandwich, but mistakes do happen, especially when you're making 500 sandwiches in 2 hours. Like, you're gonna, even with that slip, you're gonna make a mistake, you're gonna forget, you're not gonna realize, whatever. Mistakes happen sometimes.
I mean, but I understand mistakes do happen, like, sometimes, but I don't get McDonald's a whole lot. Like, maybe 2 or 3 times a year, if that. And it's usually, like, a last resort, because it's just the only thing on the way from where I'm coming from. But, like, maybe 3 of those 4 times, they still put onions on something.
it's the universe trying to tell you onions are fucking great.
But so I like, is there like a particular food that you don't like? You don't like pickles, right?
I am, is that your brother? I am not a fan of pickles, mostly because of the texture.
So I realize
I don't so, like I don't like the soggy yet crunchy. It's just weird to me.
I get that. So pickles are kind of a bad example because they are very potent flavor wise usually.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but they're pretty. So are onions.
But yeah. Like, I'll have pickled onions and things like. It's just pickled cucumbers that I'm not a fan of.
Yeah, but so I was trying to use something that you didn't like as like an example. But as somebody that doesn't like onion, as soon as you put onion anything into a dish, it overpowers everything else for me. Like mm-hmm. That's all I taste is onion. So like if I go and get like a bagel from like Dunkin' Donuts, and I ask them for a plain bagel with cream cheese. And because they just keep all of their bagels in the same fucking bin, every one of their bagels just tastes like somebody fucking rubbed an onion all over it for an hour.
Oh, man. I would love a good onion bagel right now. That would be amazing.
They've given me those before, and I've actually turned it around and requested a refund. Oh, like, because I ask for a plain bagel, and they give me a fucking onion bagel. And if I catch it before I pull out of the parking lot, I go back in and get a refund. Like, I don't even get a new bagel. I just get a refund. Because at that point, like, I don't have time to wait for them to make a new bagel. I just need my, like, $2 back. Like, I'm probably running late. I have to get to work.
Anyway, now that we've heard more about Cobb's bad food takes, Druten, your OLED TV.
You also don't like cheesecake, you son of a bitch.
It's again, it's a texture thing more than it is a flavor. I don't
what,
like
creamy and delicious, you fucking weirdo?
Yeah, right?
I'm not a fan of that. Wait, I also, it's like...
Not, so, do you not like the creaminess or the deliciousness?
No, it's there's more to it. There's more to it, and there's more into like what is goes into making a cheesecake that like just puts me off on it. And I've had cheesecake, especially since going gluten free. Like Cheesecake Factory has a gluten free cheesecake, and it's mostly too rich for my taste. And I don't like the richness.
That is 100% true. Like a small like Cheesecake Factory gives you a very large piece of cheesecake, and really you only need a small piece of cheesecake at any time.
Yeah,
I mean I'll. Disagree with it. Take all the cheesecake can get, but it's fucking
like, yeah. No, I like a piece of cheesecake, but like I agree with Richie. Like so, like a lot of times cheesecake is just so rich. Like
yeah,
it's eating a huge chunk of it at once is too totally. Much for me too.
Like getting a cheesecake from Cheesecake Factory, I need like 3 glasses of milk in order to get through.
I will say the ShopRite we were bitching about a little while ago, they do a few like sliced packages. Of cheesecake in their like little bakery section yeah. That are like they're like some different like flavored cheesecakes that are actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And before you get on my case about not liking cheesecake, have you ever gone to Rodizio and ate in a chicken heart?
Yes, I have.
I think so.
It's not terrible.
I have too. So just because I hate cheesecake doesn't mean I'm picky either. I just don't like cheesecake.
So to be fair, I am open to trying almost anything.
Yeah.
But if I don't like it, I'm not going to force myself to keep eating it. So, like I don't like shellfish. Well, I mean, shellfish, yes. Like, I'm not a big... I think crab and lobster are overrated and not worth the effort at all. But I don't like clams or mussels or any of those, like mollusks. Mm-hmm. I think they're slimy and disgusting.
Agreed.
But, like, every couple of years, like, I will try one again, especially if it's, like, made differently, just to see. It's like when we went to New Orleans a couple years ago, I had... what are they called? They do the oysters there certain way.
A clam oysters Rockefeller?
No, it's like they're like roasted or something like that, and they have like a sauce on them. Like they're actually delicious. They're not slimy. They're not chewy. Okay. They basically melt in your mouth.
Hmm. Well, and see the problem is the slimy chewiness the sliminess are generally raw, and the chewiness is generally overcooked. So you have to find the non-raw. Properly cooked ones to get the non-slimy, non-chewy. And, like, stuff like that, like clams and oysters are just, it's hard to, like, I've never really liked them either.
Yeah, I wish I could remember what the actual, I'm gonna Google it real quick, because, like, they were actually really good.
Like I like spaghetti and clams, but I won't eat, like, full-on clams.
Yeah, me either.
Char-grilled. They're char-grilled oysters.
Huh, okay.
And, yeah, like, they cook them perfectly. They get like this weird like sauce on them too, and they serve it with just like Italian bread. And
okay.
Yeah, we went to a place down there, and it like we actually ended up going back twice for them because they were. And it was one of those things where like I just tried one. I'm just like, here, you get a plate of them. I will try one, and I'll order, like, something else. And then we went back, and we ended up both ordering a plate of them, because they were so good.
Nice.
Yeah. Where'd the outline go?
Anyway, Drew, your OLED TV.
It's real fucking good.
Nice. How did we get all, how did that happen?
Costco.
OLED right. TV, Costco, ShopRite, cooking. Right.
I did just realize my TV is from 2016. It is getting to the point where it should be replaced at some point soon.
I believe that's when my TV was from.
Mine's probably about that old. And the TV I have that is about that old wasn't that decent. It was like maybe a $200 TV. It wasn't made to be like super fancy. So it's kind of older.
Drew, out of curiosity, does that OLED, is it like Android TV, or does it just have like the apps built into it or anything?
It is WebOS, what LG uses.
Well, that sounds like it's probably not super intuitive.
How
is it?
It's actually pretty good, honestly.
Okay.
So the remote is actually like basically like a Wiimote. It's a pointer, and then also has like a scroll wheel and a circle ring, like arrows.
Okay.
As well. The YouTube app is real good. It's got, you know, Netflix, basically all the streaming apps you could want.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. Does it have just like a store you can go to download the apps? Because that's it. Like, if we ever look for, well, I mean, obviously we'll look for a new TV eventually, but like, if I were to look at those, like, I need a TV that I can just get those on because that's all we have to watch.
Yep. It has a store. Someone actually even built an app for Giant Bomb on there. And I was using yesterday.
Do you know, does it, I mean, I would hope this is the case considering the quality of TV. Do the apps that are built in support like 4K Ultra HD stuff?
Oh, yeah. The YouTube app for the TV was better than YouTube app through our cable box.
Which sounds about right.
I don't think the cable box was outputting HD. It was outputting 4K stuff, but I don't think with the HDR, whereas the built-in app does 4K HDR. Like, I pulled up a random, like, I literally just searched 4K HDR in YouTube, and there was a video of someone walking around Tokyo at night, which, like, I feel like night stuff is the best way to show off the HDR shit, because, and the OLED, really, because how dark the OLED can get. And one of the first things in it is person walks around a corner and there's this big painting thing that's real lit up. And like, I originally ran it on the cable box. I was like, oh, that looks pretty cool. And then I was like, well, let me go pull up the YouTube app for TV. And it was so much better. And I even had Sarah come out and go like, look, all right, I need to show you the difference between how this looks on the cable box and how this through the TV app. And she was like, holy shit, that's so much different.
Yeah, it's always crazy. Like the first time you go like, was your last TV 4K?
No.
Yeah, so, like, just to go from, like 1080 to 4K and actually have, like, 4K content play on something is a big deal. Mm-hmm. When you get, like, that OLED with, like, the, like you said, like the actual blacks and HDR and everything, it's like, night and day.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
Cool. So, Rich, you specifically wanted to talk about Hades because you hate Drew's opinion and you think he's wrong.
Wrong. So after we had recorded,
look, that's not what you sent me earlier.
We were 2 weeks ago when we were recording. I had talked about how I'd started playing Hades. I only had a handful of runs in, and how I was basically like, it's a fun game, but I don't see it being Game of the Year material. I don't understand the hype behind it, but it is a fun game. Where then Dritten commented. Or messaged me the next day after he listened to the episode and said, "You are so wrong." Uh-huh. And so at this point now, and I said, "Next time you're back on, we can talk about it." And I felt like this would be like a nice little discussion we could have because I have since played Hades more.
Okay.
And I still enjoy the game. It is a fun game, but I still stand by it is, in my opinion, it is not Game of the Year material, and I still don't understand the overhype that it's been.
How many runs have you got?
Maybe sub 30. I don't know.
No. Well, I mean, how many runs have you gotten through the final boss?
I haven't gotten through the final boss.
You still know jack shit about this game's story.
I don't at this point, I don't care about the story because the gameplay isn't pulling me in.
I don't understand how it's not.
So for starters, it is it lacks variety. Like, the weapons are cool, and there's 6 different weapons, but it's very bare bones weapon. Like, if I'm using the sword, it's hitting square a bunch of times or hitting triangle. Like, there's no combos. There's no variety in that.
That's not a thing that exists in Rikes.
But that's something I look for in action games. Like, and yes,
do you play roguelikes?
Huh?
Like, do you play many roguelikes?
So I've played, as far as I know, I've only really played 2 roguelikes. And it was Crypt of the NecroDancer and Rogue Legacy, which I really liked. Rogue Legacy, mm-hmm. But Rogue Legacy was on a different spectrum than this game was.
Mm-hmm. Out of curiosity, just because I know what Crypt of the NecroDancer is. Like, would that be considered a roguelike?
Yeah, it's a roguelike.
Yeah. Okay. You start your run with at 0. You have to every time you go in, it's a random layout. It's mm-hmm. a roguelike.
Okay. I wasn't sure. Like, I knew it was like a rhythm based dungeon crawler, but I didn't know if it had that, like, when you die, like, you start over, like, regenerated levels, all that sort of thing.
Yeah. But, like, after you beat each world, so, like, say, I think there's, like, 4 or 5, like, actual worlds in Crypt of the NecroDancer. If you beat World 1, you can just jump right to World 2 story-wise. You don't have to go through World 1 and then World 2. But it is still, it has, like, the roguelike play. And consistent runs, consecutive runs, you get better, you start to learn the enemies, but, like, there's still, in a game like that, in Crypt of the NecroDancer, there still seemed to be variety because the stages did seem to change up a little bit more, had a little bit more difference to it. Like, the combat was different because it wasn't just attacking, it was learning the patterns of the enemies you're fighting and recognizing the weapons that you're using and how to fight them. Whereas in Hades, it's squares or triangles. There's no combination. And then going into the worlds, like, I have seen the same looking stages every time.
It's not that crazy random, though. Like, it definitely seems that there is, each level has a set number of tile sets that are going to come up in different orders, mm-hmm. which is not that different than, like, yeah. I bet if you, like, Crypt of the NecroDancer, like, World 1 probably has X number of tile sets that are going to come up randomly.
I'd have to go back and play it more and see if I can recognize and remember the tile sets, but, like,
It could have way more. I know there's a little more freedom with the exploration in NecroDancer.
And that's, like, I guess that's...
walls and stuff, I guess, right?
You can break through walls and blow things up and, like... it's not just like, it's not arena based like this, like Hades is. Hades is very arena based. It is, you go into a one tile, you fight all the enemies, you pick your reward for the next tile, you go in, you fight all the enemies. It is mm-hmm. just sequential arenas. And I've already spoken, I don't like arena shooters. And, like, that's kind of what it gets to me here. Like, I'm still having fun with this game, but I'm just getting very, like, overdone with, like, I've seen this level this many times. I've literally fought the same level 3 times in this same play, not run, but same, like, 1 or 2 hour session of playing. I've seen this same tile 3 or 4 times, maybe more. And then
get good, and you'll see the same things less.
Well, no, like, I'm my last playthrough, I made it to the dual bosses at the end of Elysium.
Okay.
Like, I'm like sub 30 runs, and I'm at, I don't know if that's far or if that's good or whatever. But
I'm over 100 now.
Well, no, I'm saying in a method of progress, I don't know if me being just under 30 runs, but getting to the end of Elysium is good or not. Like, I don't know.
I don't know. I've seen people beat it in, like, sub 20 run, like, get their first escape. I should not say beat it, because you fucking have not beaten that game when you escape the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the fucking slightest. I've seen people escape the first time sub 20 runs. Around 30 is about what I'd say when I got my first escape, or at least probably to where you are. Like,
yeah.
you're probably on about the
same yeah, and, I was. And I probably would have done better in that last run if I had a better weapon. I think I was using the fist that time because they had the bonus to the experience stuff, whatever. I don't remember what it's called.
I think it's just called darkness.
Yeah. Which, that leads to my next problem. With the amount of randomness this game is and having five different forms of currency in a run, that drives me nuts. And it makes it to, I've had runs where I don't get crystals. I've had runs where I don't get darkness. I've had runs where I don't get, the food, the ambrosia or whatever that you feed to the people.
The, like, nectar.
Nectar, whatever it is. Like, you have five different forms of currency, and one of them is absolutely pointless, and it's the Charon, the money, because I picked that up just by playing the game. And I get more than enough money as it is.
Well, yeah, that's the individual run based currency.
Yeah, but
the
like
other stuff is the game progression.
Yeah, but it's like you're halting. Which I understand they want people to play more and more and more. But with the amount of randomness that this game has, and having five different forms of currency plus health increases, ability increases, weapon augmentations, health increase and random encounters. That's what, 8, 9, 9 to 10 different types of rooms that you can pick every time you go in. I don't know. It's just too random to me.
I mean, part of that game's design is forcing you to make choices. Like, that's an intrinsic part of the design of that game.
Yeah, which I get. I have to make choices, but I can't upgrade my character anymore because I haven't been getting any keys. I have not gotten, I made like three playthroughs that I didn't get any keys. So I can't buy any more upgrades.
So, you know, like, there's a vendor you can swap things around with, right?
Yeah. Okay. I found that out my last run through. Like, and that goes into other problems, like the Titan Blood. I've only gotten six of those because I just found out that you could upgrade to them. And I didn't even know how to use them until the end of my last playthrough, where I noticed that you go up to the weapon you have equipped and use your action button or whatever on it again. And then you open up the menu to upgrade it. I'm like, I had this Titan Blood for 4 hours and I never used it because I didn't know how to use it. But right now I only have five or six because I'm afraid to use it because I don't know how infrequent it is that I'm going to get this stuff.
So I would say, I'll tell you, those are very infrequent, but use them because you need to use them to unlock more shit. And then as you get once you complete one run, like escape, it then unlocks a new mode where you have to do it then again with each weapon. It unlocks a mode where you're then going to increase certain difficulty levels, basically, by making decisions on things to increase. Do you want to give the enemies more health? Do you want to have them do more damage? Do you want there to be more enemies when you spawn? Do you want to set that you only have 9 minutes to escape each world? Whatever. And those will raise a heat meter that each time you raise it by one, it resets all the unlocks. And then you can unlock the four things again. And then clear it again, and then bump it up another one, and it resets all the unlocks. So, like, after we talked, I 2 weeks ago, I then went back and played, and I got to the final boss 10 runs in a row, and escaped 5 of them.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I've gotten so much more story I have 7 escapes now, and I'm, like, now just getting to the juicy of the story.
And see, like, that took you over hundreds of runs. How many, like, probably, like, 10
like
hours?
60 hours.
How much?
I'm, like, 65 hours.
Yeah, the gameplay isn't pulling me, like, the combat system alone isn't pulling me in enough to actually want to put that much time into it. I am enjoying what I play, but at this point, it's going to be, I have an hour, let me pick it up and play. This is definitely not a game for me that I'm going to be sitting down and playing straight through.
Yeah, I mean, you're wrong, but, like, I mean, it's one of the best games I've played ever, period. Like, I can't say enough good.
I mean, it's one of the best games ever is just, it's a best games you've played ever is a bold statement. Like,
okay,
but it
like,
is.
Look
your...
at how many fucking people have said it's the best game this year and one of the best games in a long time.
Look, it is your personal preference. Like,
Rich, you're just on the wrong side of history.
This is just. All I'm saying is, like, I don't fully understand the hype, and sure, if it takes me 60 hours to get into the, like, the juicy part of the story in a story that right now I find very boring. And,
do you go talk to every character every time you die?
I talk to every character every time I die. I've given every character at least one ambrosia. I pet Cerberus every time he's there. Like, anytime I run into a character, I talk to them, and I read what they're talking about. And it's, like, it's nothing special. I know these characters from Greek mythology knowledge that I have in my head.
I mean,
that, like,
so did I. Like, that, like, you're, like, demeaning the game based on knowing a thing. Like, I knew, like, that basically, I should say, I have knowledge of Spider-Man. That will make that game less good.
No, I'm not saying it makes it less good. I'm just saying I haven't gotten anything that pushes me into wanting to learn more about the story. All I've gotten right now is he wants to escape. He was lied about who his mom was. And like, those two, like, him being lied to about who his mom was something absolutely obvious to me.
Sure. I mean, that does, like, I don't...
Like right now, nothing pushes me into needing to know the story because I know the relationships of these characters based on my knowledge of Greek mythology. Like, that I don't... Like, there's... Like, with in my opinion, a gameplay that doesn't really have too much variety and is kind of way too repetitive...
Variety comes from the boons and not the specific weapons. Like, you are not wrong about the basic combat on the weapon. Granted, there is still a shit ton of shit you don't know about the weapons because you haven't used the Titan Blade. Like, I have new versions of the weapons that act so differently.
Yeah, this is my problem is if I have to get 30 hours into this game before, like, these things start to feel different. There's nothing pushing me into playing this game.
But if better at the game, it wouldn't take so many hours to get into it.
But, like, also, like, you're saying the boons, like, they add variety, yes, but then that again brings my disdain towards the randomness, because there's so many different kind of boons that you can get through each playthrough.
I mean, yes.
Like, but... I've gone through 4 playthroughs without seeing... Zeus at all, and his boons are some of the better boons, in my opinion.
I mean, you know, you can have a slight effect on that, right?
I know. The game has not said how you can push for... Or, I didn't even know that I could give the Ambrosia stuff, whatever it is called, to the gods until the most recent playthrough.
So you just hit the button immediately, is what you say.
But no,
it says it right on the screen when you walk up to a booth.
I've never had the stuff during a run. And then I would go through, like, the history information, like the codex, and see that they have the little hearts. Like, that's, again, I don't get those things often enough. I'll get Dionysus's ability to where anytime you get those, you get a health increase, but I'll get one throughout my entire playthrough, and that's the one he gives me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're rare. Like, they're rarer than a lot of the stuff. Not as rare as the hammer. Always fucking take the hammer if you see the hammer. Always.
I've seen the hammer quite frequently, but it'll be like, you know what, I'm trying to get, it'll, the hammer and then a key, and I'm like, I fucking need keys. I'm gonna get the keys, not the hammer.
But the hammer, the weapon upgrade are so much better than anything.
Like, I had one run that I was really liking. It got me, I had the sword, and I had vampirism with the sword because I took the hammer. And every room after that for the next 3 or 4 rooms was health increase after health increase. So I had 100 health with vampirism. And I was like, this is a great run. And then, like, I get to Elysium, and there's finally, like, that, like, each world has a variety in enemies, but, like, these enemies, the fucking shield guys, fucking suck.
Yeah, they're pretty bad.
And I, like, that's when, like, I actually, I start to die and have to use my respawns, and I I'm happy you like it, and it is a fun game. It's just I don't understand the hype. I don't get it.
So, as somebody that has not played this, and who knows if or when I will, I do think it's wild how much praise it gets. To hear you, like, not dismiss it, like you said, you have fun with it, but to not actually praise it the way I keep hearing so many other people praise it.
I don't know, maybe I had different expectations for this game. Maybe it's like what I expect in an action-y game like these was more than what I'm given.
You definitely are coming at it with expectations that aren't for the genre.
But like you, at the same time though, you can't say that because Rogue Legacy was absolutely different than this, and they're both the same genre.
I mean, sure, Rogue Legacy doesn't have combo attacks.
Rogue Legacy is also a side scroller with single button attacks, and there's variety in the stages.
No, there wasn't.
There
are four zones in Rogue Legacy that are all like it's always castle, grass,
that's,
tower, dungeon. Like
yes,
it's
but
the fucking same.
The design Diablo 2 and Diablo Diablo 2 where the maps were random every time you walked into them. That's more what Rogue Legacy was. Maybe I didn't play it enough to see the repetition of the layouts, but like it was the same style, different combat style because different kind of gameplay. A side-scrolling roguelike like that, I don't expect to breed combos because it's more of a Metroidvania type thing. But there's not a lot of combos in those types of games. An isometric top-down game like this, where I mean, I played Bastion, which is made by the same people, and it had these similar flaws. Like there was no real combos. It was the two button presses. I also don't really have a strong memory of the Bastion gameplay, even though or combat, even though I just recently played it, because it was fairly unmemorable. The allure to Bastion was the actual story that was brought into you right away. Whereas this, like, with like combat that doesn't seem to have a lot of variety and is kind of just like it's mundane in my opinion, and a story that doesn't pull you in right away. It's just my opinion. I'm not saying the game sucks. Just I don't get it.
So one, as someone who's played a 1,000+ hours of Diablo 2. There ain't that fucking many tile sets in Diablo 2. Like, there really aren't. A lot of the zones are laid out in a very specific order, and you see a lot of the same shit over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, but I didn't like Diablo 2. I played it because you guys did.
I mean...
So that was a bad example, then.
Yeah.
I mean, you're the one that brought it up.
Well, no, I'm but not like, saying... Like, I'm just saying, like, that's, like, my example of what Rogue Legacy... With the map style, with how Rogue Legacy was. Yes, Rogue Legacy had the castle, the grass, like, the four different tile sets, but, like, or the four different zones, but, the, like, every time you entered into the castle, it was different.
Probably a little more different than, Hades, also probably not that much different than you think.
I mean, maybe I didn't play it enough. I've been actually wanting to play that game, but I have it on my PS3, and I'm not freaking plugging in my PS3. And it's I don't know if it's available on PS5, and if it is, no, I don't know how
it's
much.
Not. Although, actually, they did a Rogue Legacy 2. I forget if that's out.
I mean, Rogue Legacy PS4. Was available on PS4, wasn't it?
Oh wait, yeah, that was an early PS4 game.
No, it was a PS3 game.
It
was for PS Plus. It was PS3.
No, yeah. I think it was both because I played it on PS4.
I don't think it was on PS3 at all.
No, it came out in 2013. So it was definitely on PS3. Yeah, PS3, okay. PS4, PS Vita.
Oh, so I'll have to check and see if I can download it then.
And actually, it came out on the PlayStation lineup in 2014. So yeah, that should be backwards compatible because it is not one of the games that is not backwards compatible.
Yeah.
And yeah. I definitely have it on PS4 because we bought our house after the PS4 came out. I never had the PS3 hooked up downstairs, and I played Rogue Legacy in my living room and did not like it.
Yeah.
which is part of the reason why I generally steer clear of roguelikes, because I don't like them.
Yeah. Like, I like the concept of them, but it's just, they definitely, like, for somebody like you, Drew, to put 60 hours into the game, like, it's great, but, like, that's not the kind of game that I'm going to be putting that much time in at once. Like, I'll play it here and there, but, like, if I have to get 60 hours in to understand the hype, then I'm never going to understand the hype.
I was sold on the hype 4 minutes at fucking, like, I'm just saying, it's still getting better 72 hours.
Yeah, I'll throw out there, like, just listening to people debate over whether Hades is the best dad of 2020 made me want to play this game.
It's really fucking good, Cobb. Like,
it's just, I'm not good at roguelikes. I don't really have much fun with them. Like we talked about before, like, I don't like doing the same thing over and over. That's why I don't like Monster Hunter. That's why I don't really play any of those, like, games as a services. Like, I don't want to run raids. So roguelikes generally, even though the maps are different every time, just don't really appeal to me.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when the price goes cheap enough, I will probably give it a shot. I don't know what that cheap enough price is right
now. Yeah. I mean, it's, in my opinion, worth every penny at $25.
And it probably is. It just, for me, it might be $25 where I play for 15 minutes and go, yep, not for me. Just wasted $25.
It's right now, it's like, I love Monster Hunter. It's worth $60 to me. It's not worth $60 to you guys.
Like, yeah, like, if I had spent any money at all to play Monster Hunter, like, I would have wasted all of that money.
Yeah.
But for you, like, you will gladly keep spending $60 every time they release a new Monster Hunter. I would rather run my head into a steel beam.
That's your opinion.
I'm kind of like that with roguelikes, too. Like, unless it's free, I probably won't play it.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving along on this outline, because we're like an hour in right now, and we're only on item 4. I played Pokemon Red for the first time in, like, 15 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why?
Why not, right?
That's
touche.
That's good enough reason.
I broke out my 3DS. I had a my work sent me a $50 Visa gift card from our virtual holiday party.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I ended up buying Pokemon Red and Pokemon Crystal for $18 or something like that.
Yeah.
On my 3DS, and yeah, I sat down and in a sitting played through Pokemon Red.
Just all the way through in one sitting, or just
yeah.
Damn.
That's a long play session.
It was 3 hours.
Did you skip things?
Duh. Oh, yeah. I've skipped things in that game for a long time, but because I've watched so many speedruns, I found out you can skip other things. Like,
so you didn't play Pokemon Red. You speedrun Pokemon
No, Red. I skipped all the stuff I don't like all the Team Rocket, like, base in Celadon City.
Fair.
Like, that base is the worst fucking thing ever, and I didn't know you could skip it. But you can. And that... So, I can get through Rock Tunnel without Flash. Like, I've been able to do that since I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
I cannot, for the fucking life of me, remember how to get through the Team Rocket fucking Celadon basement thing.
Oh, is that, like, the one where it's, like, the auto-moving things or something?
Yeah, those little, like, platform things that, like, spin you around. It's the same thing as Giovanni's gym at the end. Yeah. And that thing always gets me, too. But yeah, that, I hate that fucking base. Like, I spend the most time stuck there. But I found out, you watching all those speedruns, all you have to do is buy one of the dolls from the mart, and you can go right to the Pokemon Tower, and you just use that on the Marowak spirit, and then you can finish that stuff and, like, do everything else.
Huh.
Yeah, it's great. Like, it's the one thing in that game that I legitimately don't like doing, and I don't ever have to do it again.
Nice.
Yeah. But otherwise, like, that game is super easy to get through, and you really, that game was easy enough that up until, like, the Elite Four, you don't, like, the level of your Pokemon don't matter a ton, because type advantage weighs so fucking heavily.
Yeah.
So, like, you can kind of, like, skip most trainer battles, at least skip, like, the shitty trainer battles if you're in, like, an area where, like, it's just inconvenient. And, like, for caves and stuff, you can generally just use, like, repels and not have to deal with a billion fucking Zubats.
Yeah.
Like, once you cut out, like, the annoying stuff like that, the game's not that long to get through.
Yeah.
But, like, you still get to, like, hit all the gyms and find the Pokemon that you want to find and do all that stuff. And I always like going through the Elite Four and just hoping I can actually get through them with, you know... Because I think some of the... Didn't one of the later generations actually let you, like, heal between the Elite Four?
Yes.
I know Sword and Shield did in a way because, like...
Sword and Shield coddles you throughout that entire game.
Yeah. Yeah. But I feel like maybe it was like X and Y or something like that. Like you actually had the option to heal your team between each fight.
I don't know. My memories always have that you could always heal. You just couldn't leave. So you could use healing items, just not leave.
Yeah. Sorry. I don't think I hit the mute button nearly quick enough to avoid that sneeze. But no, you could always use like potions and stuff like that. But
yeah. There was a later version where, like, you could actually leave, go to the Pokemon Center, and then come back.
Yeah, that's more what I meant, because, like, healing items are great. Like, you can restore, like, your HP, but if you don't find elixirs and ether and stuff like that, you can't really do anything about your actual attacks. So, and I mean, like, that game, you know, the strongest attacks tend to have the least,
PP.
Yeah, thank you. I did for the first time because of, like, the speedruns, they always use Nidoking. Mm-hmm. So, like, I did, like, go through the game with a Nidoking in my party, and, like, those things are incredibly versatile. I did not realize that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, they can learn every element, basically.
A buddy of mine was just wanting the expansions for Sword and Shield just so he could get a Nidoking. More specifically, King. But he's still mad because there's no Muk, which I get it.
Oh God, there really isn't. I forgot all about that.
Yeah, he made a poison team, and he wanted Nidoking and Muk. Which
considering Garbodor and Weezing and stuff have Galarian forms, I feel like Muk was like a given because they were going for that like factory like smoggy thing going on.
Yeah, yeah, that's surprised they didn't have Muk because they were going for pollution.
Yeah, I totally didn't realize that, but. I will say that first generation Pokemon still holds up. Like, it's still fun going, like, beating the gyms, doing some of, like, the stupid little puzzles in some of the gyms. Like, some of them are like, the Lieutenant Surge's is the worst because it's just fucking random.
Yeah,
right.
But, like, the rest of them, it's like Sabrina's. It's very, you know, you have to hit the right pads. And, Blaine's, you answer those questions. If you fuck up on a question, you have to then fight a trainer. If you don't fuck up on a question, you get to move through his gym without having to fight, like, eight people.
Yeah.
And even Giovanni's gym at the end, like, you can get through that with, like, minimal trainer battles, or you can fuck up and have to fight every single trainer.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
I guess, like, I was always the one... I don't speedrun. I hate speedrun concept. But, like, whenever I played games, I make sure to fight every... Like, if there's, like, those set battles... I do all those set battles. If you can skip one, I don't skip it. I do it, because I'm an experience whore.
So, whenever I play, like, a Pokemon game for the first time, I do that, and, like, the first two generations are really the only ones I ever go back to anymore. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, like, I mean, Diamond and Pearl, I believe it was, you actually could fill your Pokedex that way. That's how you unlock the National Dex. If you fight every single trainer in that game, you will at least have viewed every Pokemon in the Sinnoh Dex, except for the opposite version exclusive. Mm-hmm. So, like Dalgia and Palkia, whichever one, like, your version has, you wouldn't see the opposite one. But there's a painting in one of the towns of both Pokemon that counts as viewing them.
Right.
Okay. And then as long as you do that and you battle every single trainer, Professor Oak will show up and give you the National Dex, and then you can start going around post-game. And different Pokemon from the previous generations start showing up.
Yeah.
But Red and Blue, it's like there's a lot of trainers in Red and Blue, and there's a lot of areas where it's more of a hassle to fight them all than to fight the ones that you have to and get to the next city so that you can heal up and, like, keep on with, like, the, like, quest to get all the badges.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, the same thing in the caves. Like, the caves are a huge pain in the ass because there's tons of trainers and... Every step, there's a chance a Zubat's going to pop up.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you throw a Repel down, and then you can fight the trainers and not have to deal with all the fucking Zubats every three steps.
Yeah, yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, just finding out that I could skip the entire underground thing in Celadon, just, like... Because I don't mind, like, the other... like, the Team Rocket Slift building stuff. Like, that's no problem. Like, that's, you just go to, I think it's floor 6 or 7 or something like that. Like, I know it when I get to the floor, and you grab the key, and then you can get to all the other floors, because you can open all of the locked doors that way.
Yeah.
But that fucking underground thing in Celadon was always just the goddamn worst.
I don't remember, vaguely remember it, if anything. If I do remember it, I'm probably more so remembering Giovanni's, gym more so than that actual.
Probably. So it was in Celadon City, it was in the casino,
mm-hmm.
Building. When you first go in there, there's like a Team Rocket guy standing in front of like a little like poster on the wall.
Yeah.
And then if you like leave and go back in, he's moved next to it. And you can actually like interact with it then, and it opens like a secret door on the wall, and it takes you down underneath the building where it's a few levels of, those little spinning pads, and you have to hit them right, or it basically loops you around.
Yeah.
And every time I forget which one to actually hit and just get looped around, and I end up having to do like the same floor like 4 fucking times before I actually get it finished.
Should, probably get good.
I mean, hey, I don't ever have to do it again.
Which means
he got very good.
You went the opposite. You got ungood to be able to pass it.
No, I got so good I can just skip it. Though I will say it is kind of a bummer, like, because by not doing that, you also don't get the Slith Scope to be able to catch the ghost Pokemon.
Yeah.
So, like, I can't catch Ghastly or Haunter or properly fight the Marowak.
Mm-hmm.
True.
But I stopped using, like, the ghost types in that game, like, a long time ago.
I mean, they're not very good.
I mean, like, when you're 10 years old, they're great because you just put everything to sleep and then use Dream Eater.
Yeah.
True.
And like I said, like in Generation 1, because there was limited types, the type advantage was huge. Like a weak Thunder Shock was usually enough to take out something that was like 10 levels higher than you.
Yeah.
And yeah, for whatever reason, like Hypnosis and Dream Eater just fucking murdered everything.
Mm-hmm.
Except for other ghosts. But like no one else had ghosts except for all the possessed channelers in the Pokemon Tower.
Yeah.
But yeah, Pokemon Red, it's still pretty good.
Nice.
It's also going to be the 25th anniversary, I believe, this year.
Is it really?
1996 is when Pokemon, Red and Green, I want to say it was, came out in Japan.
Mm-hmm. I hate that.
Yeah. anyway, moving along, Sony Santa Monica is looking to hire for an unannounced second project.
Let me go send them my resume.
I mean, if you can be an art director, go for it.
I mean, I can tell people how to art. Sure. No, this needs to look straight. Curve your lines a little bit more. I can talk art. I know art.
So there have been hints and rumors and stuff like that, that since God of War came out, that the studio was like going to be splitting into like 2 teams and actually work on 2 different projects. One of them we know for sure is the God of War sequel.
Yeah.
And then people are just assuming that there was a second project in the works. The creative director, Corey Barlog, kind of stirred that pot. At some point, I think it was last year, he changed like his like Twitter icon to like something sci-fi-y and was like talking about sci-fi games or sci-fi settings. I forget exactly what he did, but it stirred up a lot of like, oh, Santa Monica's working on like a sci-fi game now in space. So what's happening now is people are speculating that their second game might be a Star Wars game.
And that makes sense with the recent announcements of EA no longer having the exclusives Star Wars.
Like, they still have exclusives until 2023.
Well, but that's if they're starting it now, the game's not going to come out until then.
Oh, so. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, like between Ubisoft being announced as working on their own Star Wars title, Disney creating the Lucasfilm Games imprint, so that they can work with other studios and release them under that sort of banner. And Sony already did an exclusive Disney property with Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it wouldn't be out of the question that that game did so well that Disney would give them a shot at Star Wars.
Yeah.
And Santa Monica is such a well-regarded studio after God of War that if anyone was going to get them, like, it would probably be them.
Is Spider-Man a Disney property?
Yeah.
I know movies, it's a Sony property.
That's it, though. Sony only owns... Yes, Sony only owns the movie rights. Marvel owns everything else.
Well, that's more so what I'm talking... I know Disney owns Marvel, but, like, I wasn't sure, like, about the rights for, like, the video games and stuff because of the rights for movies.
I think the only way that they could finagle that would be if it was a movie tie-in for Spider-Man. Sony may have some leverage there.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, but like...
regardless, like, he just said that it's a Disney property, not a Disney game is all he was talking about. Like,
no, but I understand Richie's question. Like, he just wasn't sure where, like who actually owned the, like, the multimedia rights outside of the comics, right?
Yeah, yeah, because, like, I know that, like, Disney owns Spider-Man and Marvel. I know that Sony owns the distribution rights to the Spider-Man movies, which is why they're not on Disney Plus. I just wasn't sure if that extended out further into video game, into these, like, if that Spider-Man game was a Disney Spider-Man game and a Marvel Spider-Man game or a Sony Spider-Man game.
I mean, it's literally called Marvel's Spider-Man.
Drew is being literal on that. I understand what you mean, though.
I understand what you, like, where you're going with that, but Cobb said they worked with another Disney property, which is Marvel and Spider-Man, not saying anything necessarily about the licensing outside that.
I know, I was just questioning the licensing in general, though. I was just, like, curious. Like,
yeah, it's just like if, like, when the X-Men games were happening, or even, what was that game that you played on Switch last year?
What, me?
Yeah, you. The Marvel game.
Oh,
Ultimate Alliance?
Alliance, thank you. Yeah. So, like, that had characters across the board. It had X-Men, had Spider-Man. At that time, X-Men were still owned by Fox, and Spider-Man was owned by Sony for the movie rights.
Yeah.
But Marvel owns the rights for all of the other mediums, I think including television. That's why I think, like, all the Spider-Man cartoons that have happened in the last 20 years have been on Disney.
Yeah.
Or a Disney-affiliated network, at the very least.
Yeah.
But yeah, so between them having worked... between Sony having done a Spider-Man exclusive, Sony Santa Monica having a second team working on an unannounced project, like, that's speculation right now, is that they're looking for people to work on a Star Wars title.
I hope not.
I wouldn't mind it.
I would like it. As long as it's not a Jedi story.
Like, I'd rather just a completely fresh IP.
Those, like, are rare. Come on.
Sure. Sure, but, like, fuck licensed stuff. Like,
you know what, though? Like, a lot of, at least my opinion, science fiction seems to be very hard for people to come up with, like, an actual compelling setting in video games.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like, it's been 10 years since Dead Space. It's been over 10 years since Dead Space, over 10 years since a good Mass Effect game. Like, there haven't been a whole lot of, like, good new properties in the sci-fi realm that I can think of.
The Outer Worlds. The Outer Wilds. Like,
I mean, the Outer Wilds was a different sort of beast, but, like, I don't know. Like, the Outer Worlds was neat, but, like, it didn't grab me. Like I thought it was cool when I played it, and then, like, I thought about going back to it a few times. I'm like, nah, I don't want to go back to it.
Yes, but, like, I'm going to put more of that on the style of the gameplay being essentially a Bethesda game, you know?
I mean, that's not wrong.
There was a fairly compelling universe, and, like, I don't know. I just don't think there's enough. There's enough Star Wars shit already. There does not need to be more Star Wars shit.
It's just, it's been 10 years of EA making shitty games with that franchise.
Yeah.
I'd like a couple good Star Wars games.
Yeah.
I mean, Knights of the Old Republic was the last
bad license.
But it's not, though. Like, Jedi Fallen Order is actually pretty good. But like Richie said, like, I want something that's not just Jedi the time.
This is something I say all the time when it comes to Star Wars, is like, you've got this huge, expansive universe that you could use, or galaxy that you could use. But you're always talking about the Jedi. You're always playing the Jedi. Like, I want like a Smuggler's Run. Like, Star Wars game. Like, I want a game in the Star Wars universe with the Star Wars, like, aliens and shit. But you're like, what was it? The Boba Fett game. Like, I remember, like, I didn't really play much of it, and it came out forever ago. I think it was PS1? Maybe PS2?
PS2.
Like, yeah, it was definitely PS2.
That would have been, that's definitely a game that, like, I want. Like, something, like that. Like, there was supposed to be that one Star Wars game that got canceled, like...
1313,
yeah. It was a non-Jedi Star Wars game, and it wasn't, like, something like a prison or something like that. I can't remember. it's been so long that I haven't thought about even thinking about it, that like that's an it's a breath of fresh air in agreed, Jordan, a highly used license.
But and also just to argue against you saying that like it just wasn't a good license. There were a lot of good Star Wars games in the 90s and 2000s. It was really after EA got the exclusivity that we got a lot of really shit games.
I mean, Battlefront 2 on the GameCube was fantastic.
Like, the Battlefront games were fun if those were sort of games you wanted. If you wanted, like, the role-playing games, Knights of the Old Republic was great. You had, like, the Rogue Squadron and TIE Fighter games and everything. You had, in the 90s, the first-person shooters that I'm drawing a complete fucking blank on their names. The Jedi Academy games were super good. And, like the you had different types of games. Like, you had the space shooter games. You had the first-person shooters that later on those games got Jedi powers, but, like, the first one didn't have Jedi powers.
Yeah.
All right, maybe they've done everything they can do with that, like, and there are just no more ideas.
But,
well, I mean, if there's no more ideas for an existing world, then what are the odds that there's going to be ideas for somebody to come up with a new world?
Well, because there's limitless possibilities for a new world.
But
there are limited possibilities in a pre-existing universe.
And that's the thing, though. Like, you're talking a whole galaxy here. Like, the Star Wars universe is a galaxy. It's a galaxy far, far away. Outer Worlds could technically be in the Star Wars galaxy. So if they're out of ideas for Star Wars, they're out of ideas for sci-fi.
No, they're not. They're not, though. Like, so what you're saying, like, you're implying that there is limitless possibilities in the Star Wars game, where what I'm saying is there is a preset lore that a fucking giant mega corporation is super anal retentive about boxing everything into that set lore and not letting anyone go outside of what they say is okay. That, like, you can make a sci-fi game outside of Star Wars where you can do fucking anything. A Star Wars game is stuck in a box of limitations.
Says you.
Says Disney.
No, I mean, like, I like Star Wars. Like, I like that universe. I like what can be done in that universe. There's not a whole lot, like we were talking about before, like, after kind of, like, putting the game down and thinking about it, like, I didn't care for the Outer Worlds. Like, I don't want to go back to that world. I'd rather go back to a galaxy far, far away. Not necessarily in the movies. They can't do the movies right anymore. But, like, I was talking to Richie about it last week. I've been reading, like, the new novel that they released, Light of the Jedi, that's set hundreds of years prior to any of the movies. And, like, it's super interesting because it is a different take on that universe. Like, there isn't an empire. Like, the Republic is actually a happy, well-functioning place.
And yet, like, in mainstream media, there is this box of, what, 40 years from episode 1 to episode 9 that, like, all medium tends to focus around. And yes, everything pre-episode 1 has been taken out of canon because when Disney bought Lucas, bought Star Wars, they got rid of that stuff. So Knights of the Old Republic is no longer a part of canonical Star Wars. But, like, them branching out and no longer having the exclusive rights for or EA having the exclusive rights for Star Wars doesn't mean they're not going to let people branch out into further aspects of the universe and just force them to stick with this box of the Skywalker saga era.
I'm not saying it has to stay within the Skywalker saga era, but I'm saying there are things about Star Wars lore that if it isn't in that game, it's not a Star Wars. Like, they might be able to go to make entire new planets and bits and pieces of lore, but not an entire new idea, like, that would not fit into Star Wars. Like, whatever ideas they come up with have to fit in this neat little box called Star Wars. Whereas, if Sony Santa Monica just got to make Sony Santa Monica sci-fi game, they can make up everything.
I don't know. I like that neat little box that's Star Wars, though.
That's fine. I'm just saying,
like, I'd rather them make a Star Wars game than come up with their own property that maybe I don't like.
What if it's a shitty Star Wars? But, like,
I mean, then it's a shitty Star Wars game, but what if it's a shitty game that I have no actual investment in to begin with?
Then you don't waste the $60 to find out it's a shitty Star Wars game. Like, I don't.
But, like, what if I do waste the $60 because I want to check out Sony Santa Monica's game and then it's a bad game about a property I don't care about? Like, either way, it's a lose-lose. Might as well have a Star Wars game.
I don't know.
And that's unfortunately, that's a kind of the point of licensing, because like it pulls the people in who are the fans of that license, and if it's a bad game, a lot of those people are probably still going to play it anyway to at least try it out or whatever. And if it's a good game, then great, it's a good game. But if you make a game that's non-licensed, that doesn't have a fan base, and it's a bad game, you're making a bad game and you're not making any money off of it.
Okay, I mean, I'd rather things take risks at this point than fucking sequel and fucking preset lore shit that, like, nobody comes up with fucking new ideas. And
man, just go play more Hades.
All
your Greek mythology that's been around for 6,000 fucking years.
Yes, I mean, you're not wrong.
Anyway, this is exciting news, guys. The fucking Snyder Cut of the Justice League looks like it's just going to be a 4-hour movie after all.
So it's not going to be like seven different parts?
Yeah, so apparently it's no longer going to be a 4-part like miniseries. It is actually just going to be a single 4-hour movie.
Yay.
Oh, man.
I don't fucking know, man. Snyder was doing a Q&A on Vero, which is a social media platform that nobody uses. And somebody asked him, like, whether it was still going to be a four-part, like, four-hour-long miniseries, or if it was just going to be a one-shot, four-hour movie. And he responded, one-shot.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're going to have a four-hour fucking Justice League movie, which is only, like, 15 minutes longer than Batman v Superman, like, Ultimate Edition. So, or maybe that movie just feels like it's 3 hours and 45 minutes. I don't know.
I never watched the Ultimate Edition of BVS.
It's not a good movie, but it's better than the, like, theatrical cut,
mm-hmm.
because they at least expand a little bit on, like, things to actually make a couple parts of that make a little bit more fucking sense.
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, 10 minutes worth of scenes of Clark doing investigative journalism, learning about the Batman, rather than him just suddenly popping up in front of the Batmobile and telling him to knock it off.
Yeah. That whole confrontation between Batman and Superman, it makes no sense. Like,
that whole movie makes no sense.
Yeah.
I've said it a million times. Like, Zack Snyder, wonderful cinematographer. Terrible fucking storyteller.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's gonna be weird. I'm not going to watch that for 4 hours straight. I will definitely watch that over multiple viewings.
Yeah.
And then the Superman and Lois show that starts next month. It's actually gonna be a full night premiere now.
What's that mean?
So, originally, it was just going to be its regular, like, hour time slot. It was going to air 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. on its premiere night.
Mm-hmm.
With The Flash would air at 8 o'clock like it normally does. Instead, Superman and Lois is actually going to air for 90 minutes. It's going to start at 8 p.m. on Tuesday, February 23rd. And then from 9:30 to 10, they're going to air a half-hour special called Superman and Lois Legacy of Hope. And then they're just going to push The Flash premiere back a week to March 2nd at 9 p.m.
Okay, that's pretty cool. I mean, I guess they're trying to build up the lore of Superman and Lois and give you more information of, hopefully it's of these characters in that universe and not, like, just the generations of Superman and Lois.
So I can guarantee all that half-hour special is going to be. And, like, I would put money on this. It's going to be cast interviews, and it's going to be recaps of Superman showing up in the Arrowverse over the last, 3 years or so he's been in it?
Yeah.
Like, that's all it's going to be. Like, it's not going to be anything new. It's not going to flesh anything out. It's just going to remind people, like, oh yeah, like, here's the first time he showed up, and here's every time he's been around since.
Yeah, he was in Supergirl on season 2, and then continued from there, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's cool. I like the idea of it being an hour and a half long.
That part I find interesting. I don't mind them bumping Flashback, because they're only bumping it back a week.
Yeah.
I assume starting on the 2nd, Superman and Lois will air at 8, and The Flash will air at 9.
Probably.
But we'll see.
And the fact that there's no crossover this year doesn't screw things up, scheduling-wise, if they do push it back.
Right. Oh, right. I completely forgot to include that in here. It's worth just bringing that up now. CW did cancel the crossover. It was supposed to be between Superman and Lois and Batwoman.
Yeah.
And it was actually announced to be that after Ruby Rose's departure. So her departure didn't really have anything to do with it. It seems like it was all pandemic COVID related.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. Like, there's no reason to, like, push these two casts and crews together, mm-hmm. if you're trying to maintain, like, as small of a bubble for that stuff as possible.
Yeah, I don't blame them for pushing it back, but it sucks mostly because this is Supergirl's last season. So like you don't get that real like I don't know like goodbye moment for Supergirl with everyone else, because I doubt they're gonna bring everyone to her like finale and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, I feel like the Flash has to appear at least once in the final season.
Mm-hmm.
Because they really like of the characters like from like the other series, like Flash and Supergirl had the most of like a friendship and relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they were the first two to meet each other. Like,
yeah,
all that stuff.
And they were building up a good relationship between Kate Kane and Supergirl, but then Ruby Rose left, and that kind of, like, screwed things up anyway, but Supergirl's ending anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, and honestly, Batwoman, probably not going to last much longer either.
Yeah, we'll see.
Did you get to watch the season 2 premiere?
I did get to watch it.
Drew, did you get to watch the season 2 premiere of Batwoman?
Absolutely not.
I figured. It'd be really fucking crazy, though, if you did just decide to watch the first episode of season 2 with no prior knowledge. What did you think, Rich, like, overall?
Overall, you said at the best, it was fine. It wasn't, I would lean more towards, like, good. It was, like, interesting and intriguing, but, like, it wasn't anything special. It wasn't anything to, like, write checks about. Like, it was just, it was good. They did a good job of, like, trying to build that relationship between the new Batwoman and the rest of the main cast. But I still feel that this is going to be a rocky season just because of, like, how disjointed it's going to be with her between, and Alice, and her and Kate's dad. I can't remember.
Yeah, and I only kind of agree with that. The reason I said it was fine is because I think they did a fine job, like, introducing the new character. I actually think that, like, she was interesting on her own.
Mm-hmm.
But them trying to force her into the existing dynamic is kind of what was like, no, that they should've, this feels like they're forcing it rather than anything even remotely organic happen.
Yeah.
And, like,
yeah.
I understand, like, there's only so much they could do with it.
Yeah.
But a lot of, like, so the interactions with her and, Luke and I forget, Kate's, stepsister's name.
Yeah, I can't remember her name either.
Like that stuff all just felt like it felt very, very forced. Like,
yeah,
well, we have to make them get along and be okay. And it's like, you don't at all. Like, it's only the first episode. You can make that relationship take a little while. It's all right.
Yeah. But like, I like what they did with, the character's name is, Ryan Wilder. And I like what they did with her monologue of being a number and like,
That was actually really good.
It was really because for those of you who listening who don't know, Ryan Wilder is played by Javika Leslie. Is that how you speak?
It's a soft C. Hang on, I have her Wikipedia page open somewhere. Pronunciation. It's Javicia.
Oh, Javicia Leslie, who's a black woman who's also, I believe, LGBTQ, a lesbian. I believe
she is bisexual. Bisexual. According to Wikipedia. So.
Apologies.
She's also vegan and is trained in Muay Thai. So, like, yeah. Fucking good for her.
She like, hits a lot of, like, what you would need for the character. Like, she's going to be able to do her own stunts. And she, as an actress, took in this role and was really good and brought in, like, this level of caring that I was surprised I got that early on. Like, it made you feel for the character. It made you, like, be interested and intrigued in the character.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of, that's what sucked the most for me is, I think they actually, they did a good job introducing us to her.
Yeah.
I think the way that they explained Kate disappearing and how she got the suit, like, it's weird, but, like, okay. Like,
yeah.
Like, I can go with that, and her having that sort of vendetta and, like, using the suit for that also makes total sense. Like as you see her backstory.
Yeah.
But like I was saying before, like the way they were trying to shove the fucking round block into the square circle, into the square hole.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh yeah, no, like it just so happens that like her adopted mom was killed by Alice. Like, what are the fucking odds?
Yeah, like and that was like the relationship between her and Alice felt very forced. I didn't really think it was super. It felt super forced between Luke and her and Kate's sister and her. Like, I understand where you're saying where it did, but
they
like,
were trying too hard to make it a thing too quickly. It's like, let it just be a little, like, let it take its time. Like, don't try and force them to be a team by the second episode.
Yeah, like, I agree. Like, if it had been more, organic and, like, over the course of two or three episodes where Ryan had the costume and was doing her own thing, but would occasionally turn it on to talk to them and figure things out, and eventually they, like, built up this relationship. I agree. I get it. But, like, they did rush it. And it did still feel organic, even though rushed.
See, I didn't think it felt organic. It was just like everyone kind of just came to the same okay conclusion. It was like she did her, like Ryan did her research and found out who Kate was.
Yeah.
And then that kind of made her be like, oh, so she wasn't just like some rich uptight girl that decided to play superhero. Like she actually was doing this for a reason and was trying to do good.
Yeah.
And at the same time, Kate's stepsister looked into Ryan and found out about her past and is like, oh no, like she's also trying to like right a wrong.
Yeah.
And it's like, great. So like in the span of 40 minutes, you guys both came to the same conclusion and that's just going to make that whole partnership that much easier. Whereas like you said, like have it take a little while, have her be like, have it be like an uneasy alliance where like she's not on team Batwoman. Like she's running around doing her own thing and like they're trying to find her, but like she's just being a Batman elusive about it, or Batwoman elusive in this case.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They're showing up like a minute too late, or they're showing up and having like an argument and her just vanishing. But then, like you said, like getting caught in like a situation and like turning on the tracker and being like, hey, like such and such is happening. Like, what do I do?
Yeah. I feel like there will be altercations between the three throughout the season that like will make this feel, I'm hoping that we get the altercations like this. It'll make it feel like, all right, they're still new to each other. They're still a new team trying to figure out each other. I have hopes for this season, and I hope it keeps going up. Like season one of Batwoman started rocky, but then got good. This one is
better. I don't know that I would necessarily call it good, but like, it finished better than it started.
Yeah. This season, it's starting rocky again. And I put it solely on the fact that Ruby Rose left. I feel like if she had not left, story would have been fine. Like, it would have been a completely different beginning of a season.
Yeah, and like you said, they were building a relationship with her and Supergirl. That, like, yes, wouldn't have lasted too long with Supergirl ending, but it was still, there were dangling plot threads from last season that involved Supergirl that were not really going to get the same conclusion to.
Yeah.
And then almost the entire actual engaging part of the narrative last season was her relationship with her sister.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist now, and now we're just going to have this Ryan angry at Alice because Alice is responsible for the gang that killed her stepmom or adopted mom. And it's like, cool, so there's not really going to be any sort of push and pull there where, like, Kate wants to take Alice down but doesn't want to kill her. Ryan just wants to kill her because she ruined her life.
Yeah, it's going to be... It's going to be interesting to see. I hope it stays good, but I'll probably stick through the whole season before I like write it off for next season or not. But like, I hope it continues to get better. Yeah.
What did you think of how quickly they sort of dispatched Hush?
That too was a letdown. Like this episode, because they didn't want. It seemed like because they didn't want to stretch things out too much, this episode was all condensed to be like four episodes. And like he shouldn't have, his identity shouldn't have been uncovered that soon. He shouldn't have tried to work that fast. Like, and that would have helped build that dynamic throughout the first couple of episodes if he like continued to keep in touch with Alice and things like that, instead of just like, oh, he was the villain of the week.
Yeah, and it's a shame because, like, historically, Hush is basically supposed to... He's supposed to be so obsessed with Bruce that he can pull off being Bruce.
Yeah.
And he kind of did it in the episode, but also, like, Julia realized it immediately.
Yeah, and that was...
And the fact that Luke didn't was stupid.
When he didn't press the buttons to go into the Batcave, at that point Luke should have been like, "This ain't Batman." But like the way that they had what's her name discover that it wasn't Bruce, that he wasn't Bruce, was like through the code words or whatever. I was just like that. Maybe they shouldn't have had her in this episode or them interact. Like, I don't even know why Bruce was at... I might have not been paying attention, but why Bruce was at the Crow's base.
Honestly, I don't remember why either.
Yeah, like, it seemed... And this is why I'm like, it seemed like they just wanted to get it done with, to push the story on and have new characters interact with with Ryan, because she has no relationship with these current characters.
Yeah, I do hope that because they've cast somebody to be Bruce Wayne, like we now know what Bruce looks like, that they actually have Bruce Wayne show up on the show at some point.
That, yeah.
Even if it's the same thing we got with Superman, where like the first time he appears in Supergirl, it's one episode, if I remember correctly, where he's actually him.
Yeah.
Because the like other time you see him, it's just like it's a stand-in wearing like the boots, basically.
Yeah.
It would just be nice to see like Batman be Batman. Even honestly, he doesn't even have to actually be Batman. Like just having like Bruce Wayne show up as like a character for real.
Yeah. It would be nice to see that. Nice to like have that Batman figure, maybe even as a mentor role for Ryan, since she's like, she doesn't have that connection to him now. She has no reason to uphold like the Batman mentality or the Batwoman mentality that like they do need to introduce Bruce.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, moving right along. Deadline has been reporting that Chris Evans is in talks to return to the MCU.
After seeing his tweet, I'm skeptical of this.
Look, any actor that says news to me or not that I'm aware of, that's just actor speak. Like,
yeah.
It could be real. It could be them just doing what they're supposed to do and not admitting to
it. I got excited at the notion, I guess, and I am like intrigued to see what they do with him if they do bring him back. But I'm not trying to get too excited and bring my hopes up for something that just like was a miscommunication or a communication error between those at Deadline and whoever they got and their source.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like Evans didn't say that he was just 100% done.
Mm-hmm.
Like. Even in interviews like earlier this year, he said something along the lines of like it was never a hard no, it just isn't an immediate yes.
Yeah, he wanted to pursue his own projects, which is why like after his contract, I think he had a 6-movie contract at start, maybe even less. Like he wanted just as his contract was like nearing the end, he had come out and said like, I'm probably not going to re-sign a contract. I want to pursue my like other projects, and I want to like direct and be like Chris Evans and not be Captain America.
Yeah, but I could see if he does sign any sort of deal, it won't be to be Captain America. He'll be Steve Rogers. He'll probably be old Steve Rogers, or it'll be a flashback or something like that.
Yeah.
But I imagine it'll be a small part somewhere between like when RDJ was in Spider-Man Homecoming, or when Evans himself cameoed very briefly in Thor the Dark World.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to be a blink and you miss it like that one, but I don't even think it would be quite as, like, impactful as, like, RDJ and Spider-Man.
Hell, with all the signings that we're getting for the next Spider-Man movie, it could just be a Spider-Man, like, cameo type thing. He goes to him, to, like, to Steve Rogers, where Pete goes to Steve Rogers just to be like, what do I do now? Like, I'm wanted like he for could, murder.
Yeah, like, it could be the old Steve Rogers. It could be, like, they could film just a new one of those, like, detention videos or whatever those things were from the first Spider-Man movie that had Cap in them.
Yeah.
Like, it could just be a new one of those.
Yeah.
But, like, not a new one, like, still, like, an old one, because it would be, like, him as Captain America, not him as an old man.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind it though, like as long as they don't try to like comic book it too hard and make him young again and make him Captain America again. Like, I'd rather see that stuff carry on the way that they're going. Let Anthony Mackie see what he can do with the shield.
Yeah. Yes.
But, yeah.
I have a feeling that if they do bring him back, and they bring him back as, like, young Steve, they're not going to put him back at the mantle of Captain America way because they gave Falcon and Anthony Mackie that role.
Yeah, and even then, like, I don't know that Evans would necessarily want to be back in it that mm-hmm. hard either. That's why I said, like, I think it's going to be, like something a little bit bigger than just a quick cameo.
Yeah.
Like, if anything, him just showing up as old Steve Rogers and giving somebody some advice.
Yeah. It could even be like what are we on? Phase 5?
Phase 4.
Phase 4. It could even be like a phase 5, phase 6 like thing where like they do bring him back as Captain America, but it's a long ways away from here. Like who knows what they have really in mind. A lot of their plans have been put on hold because of COVID and not being able to release and really film a lot of their content.
Thor Love and Thunder starts filming like in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
All the actors are posting that they're in Australia in their quarantines so that they can start.
Is the Eternals even, is it done? The
Immortals. Yeah, it's done. And I think Eternals.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's at least done principal photography and it comes out sometime this year, I believe.
Yeah. Cause we still have Black Widow and then the Eternals.
And Shang-Chi.
Shang-Chi.
Doctor Strange is filming right now. And then Thor Love and Thunder is going to be filming in just a couple of weeks. I totally missed it, but like Thor and Love and Thunder is going to have all, or at least most of the Guardians apparently too.
I didn't notice that, but that one's first. We also have Guardians 3 soon.
Well, we don't know soon for that, because James Gunn has to first finish Suicide Squad, and then he will be starting on pre-production for Guardians.
Yeah.
So, that could still be a while.
Yeah.
Keeping with the MCU stuff, though, the first two episodes of WandaVision were released this past Friday.
I liked them. They were good. The show was fun, the show was funny, and the show was intriguing. And it's everything I expected.
Now, Drew, did you check that out at all? Or do you intend to?
Nah, well, I don't know. We might, but I have not.
It was kind of neat because it's so different from anything superhero. Like, these first two episodes were like old school sitcoms with just like a little bit of science fiction tossed in.
Yeah. Okay. So, like, the first episode was basically highly referencing Lucy and Dick Van Dyke, and then the second episode was like I Dream of Jeannie, I believe.
So it was Bewitched, and actually the second episode had a bunch of Lucy stuff too. The opening scene where they're in bed and they have two separate beds was a reference to I Love Lucy, because back in the 50s, men and women could not be in the same bed in a scene together.
Yeah, but like they pulled the bed, like every episode it's kind of like showing the evolution of television sitcoms while also telling the story of Wanda and Vision, or whatever the story is of Wanda and Vision, and it's I'm really, really intrigued in it. I know a good number of people who watched it and turned around and said, this sucks, because there's no superhero in it.
Yeah, no, that's stupid. People are stupid.
Yeah, yeah. I have a few that like were just absolutely confused, and I had to talk to them about it, and then they got super into it. But like at least two or three people that were like, this sucks. I'm like, no, it's really, like, think about it. Like, what the hell is going on? There's like this mystery, and like, it's good. Maybe it was also released, because I think, wasn't Falcon and Winter Soldier supposed to come out first? But
no, I think this was always supposed to come out first. I might be wrong, but
I can't remember. Don't need to worry about looking into it though. But like, I feel like it might have. It did. It is kind of releasing out of order because Black Widow was supposed to have come out and the Eternals before this, I believe.
But neither of them are going to have any impact on this show.
True. But
and like. Just, I don't know. I think the show is exactly what it should be. Like, it's got like the sitcom vibe, and seeing it go kind of through the ages, like even just the jump from episode 1 to 2, where like in episode 1 it was super 50s like couple sitcom, like the Vision went to an office job, Wanda constantly wore like 1950s like housewife dresses and everything.
Yeah.
To the next one was definitely supposed to be like more like the early 60s, and she wore pants.
Yeah, it was really good. That's really all I can say about it. In my opinion, it was really good.
Yeah, and then there were a lot of allusions to what might be happening. There were multiple times throughout both episodes where you see the S.W.O.R.D. logo, which in the comics, S.W.O.R.D. is like an extraterrestrial like shield, basically.
Yeah.
They are I forget what the acronym stands for, but it's S.W.O.R.D. is the organization protecting the Earth from things outside of the Earth.
So in I know the SW in the MCU is sentient weapons.
So that's apparently what people are saying, but I don't think it's confirmed yet.
It's written on something. It's been seen in the show.
Oh, was it on some? Okay.
It is written on something.
But yeah, so it looks like maybe in the MCU, it's more about just anything that could be a weapon that also has its own thoughts, which is Wanda and Vision, frankly. And that also makes sense. So the one black woman that's in episode 2, that's Monica Rambeau.
Yeah.
That's the actress who's supposed to be Monica. That's not what she's called in that. But her superpower is she can turn into energy, any type of energy. So she would also be a sentient weapon.
Yeah. So it is a sentient weapon observation and response division. And you can kind of read it in the end of the first episode when it's on the screen as it's spinning. It's I looked it up on the Marvel Cinematic Universe fandom wiki, and it shows the image of its acronym.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want to go super heavy with spoilers right now just because it did just air, a few days ago. But I think that one scene with the beekeeper, I think that was an allusion to AIM. Whether it's the same AIM that was in Iron Man 3 or not, but I did read somewhere that apparently AIM has been referenced separately in the MCU before, outside of Iron Man 3.
Yeah, I've seen those theories about that being AIM. I feel like that's a stretch. He also had a sword on his back, so I question that.
It lines up though.
Yeah.
Strucker, Baron Strucker is the one who was instumental in creating AIM originally. In the MCU, he is the one that gave Wanda her powers.
Yeah.
They also allude to Hydra and Strucker in one of the little commercials.
Yeah.
And honestly, a beekeeper suit is so iconic to AIM. And it was such a random scene that even if it's not alluding to them being in the show, it's gotta at least be a reference to AIM.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, there were a lot of little Easter eggs throughout both of the episodes.
Yeah, it's honestly too many to even talk about at this point, because it's just everything that happened and all these the voice on the radio during episode 2
when they were having a little meeting, right?
Yeah, I think it was the FBI agent from. I think I read it.
No, it was Agent Wu.
It was Agent Wu, which I was like, I didn't realize that until I saw one of these things. I was like, oh shit, but I've also only seen Ant-Man and the Wasp two or three times. I'm not surprised I didn't recognize his voice.
Yeah, exactly. But even outside of like those sort of things that are definitely going to be tied into the story, there's a lot of little Easter eggs for fans of stuff. Like the two commercials with the Stark and the Hydra things. During the second episode, the opening theme, when they're, it's the animated theme, at one point Vision is phasing through the floorboards and you see stuff in between the two floors.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of bones that look like dog bones, which IGN, I think it was, pointed out that in Tom King's The Vision, where he made himself a family, he also had a dog. And right between those bones was the helmet of the Grim Reaper, which is a Marvel villain, who has a bunch of ties to Vision. So the Vision in the comics, his brain or something like that, is based off of another superhero, Wonder Man.
Yeah.
The Grim Reaper is Wonder Man's brother.
Yeah.
In Tom King's run of Vision, Grim Reaper shows up to, destroy Vision and ends up being murdered by Vision's wife that he created, who is actually based on Wanda's brain patterns.
Yeah.
Because robots are weird.
Yeah.
So, that was, his helmet being in there was, a nod to that. Some of the signs in the grocery store were nods to comic book stuff, too. The milk was a nod to the cow-human thing that that was at the mountain that Wanda and Pietro were raised at in the comics.
Yeah.
Like weird like weird little nods to that sort of stuff.
There's so many like little Easter eggy nod things throughout it that it's just like Nerdist did one, IGN did one. Like just try to look up one of these articles about these. It's just very interesting.
My two favorites. One of them it might not even be an Easter egg, but the like head bitchy lady of like the committee for the talent show, the blonde Dottie, mm-hmm. I think her name was.
I think so, yeah.
So this is only relevant because I'm watching Buffy right now. That actress is from Buffy. She played Anya, who was a vengeance demon that got turned into a human. She might be the best character on this on that show. She had an irrational fear and hatred of bunnies, and that episode happened to have a bunch of bunny related stuff in it, like between like the magic act and everything.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was kind of funny, and a bunch of those like Easter egg articles point that out too.
Yeah.
And then the one thing that I didn't see any of them say, while they're doing the magic act and Vision is kind of like drunk or whatever, like, I mean, he wasn't drunk, but you know what I mean? Like he was acting inebriated.
Yeah.
At one point he says, "I'm an illusion," when he's supposed to be saying like, "I'm an illusionist."
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was very, that was very intentional.
No,
because I think he is an illusion.
No, his magic act name was Illusion.
Yeah, but he said, "I'm an illusion," not "I'm illusion."
I get that.
I actually didn't realize that was his magic act name was Illusion.
It was Illusion and something else. I can't remember what Wanda's was.
Yeah, I missed that part. But he didn't say, "I'm Illusion." He said, "I'm an illusion."
Yeah, I see where you're getting there. But I also think that might be kind of a stretch because he was drunk. Maybe he just, "I'm an illusion" because he's doing so magic. But I
was supposed to be
saying.
Drunk, but a writer still wrote the line for it and wrote it intentionally.
Yeah.
But like, Vision's dead. We know Vision's dead. He was destroyed in Infinity War.
But he's a robot.
But he's a robot that had the Soul Stone in him, and the Soul Stone is gone.
But the Soul Stone wasn't what gave... Like, the Soul Stone gave him his mind, but his mind was also an amalgam of... And they talked about it in Infinity War. His mind is an amalgam of the... Or not Soul Stone, Mind Stone. His mind is an amalgam of the Mind Stone, Tony Stark, Bruce Banner, and Ultron. And it's like a combination of all of them. Which Shuri was in the middle of being able to remove the stone from him so he would still have sentience.
Yeah, but it... As far as we know, she didn't achieve that.
She didn't achieve that, but maybe there could be a possibility that like she had like some form of backup for him.
But keep in mind though, right after that happens, Thanos snapped everyone away that would know how to do that stuff.
Yeah, but this is taking place after that. This is taking place after the blip.
Yeah, it's taking place 5+ years after it. Like.
Yeah.
Vision has been dead and gone for over 5 years at this point.
Maybe they brought him back.
Look, I'm not saying that they're not going to have brought him back by the end of this. Right now, it's an illusion.
Maybe. Like I said, I don't want to get too far into it and spoilery for people because, like you said, it did just come out. And there's so many theories out there right now about it that it's just like... I've been reading too much into this, and I'm super intrigued. And kind of, like, totally down for some of these fan theories of what's going to happen next.
Yeah, and also in the credits of the second episode, there was a special thanks section for Brian Bendis and Oliver Copiel, I think is how you say his name.
Yeah.
Which, they were the creative team that did House of M, which was this comic book series where Wanda lost her mind and created an alternate reality where everyone lived for a while. And then when she came back, she said, "No more mutants," and all the mutants went away for a while.
Yeah, that was one of the cooler Easter eggs. Was the wine bottle was?
Oh right, yeah, the House of M wine in French or whatever.
Well, it was So like the in French, it's like House of Misery, and it has the M that's like similar to the House of M logo,
yeah,
or something like that.
But I thought it was interesting that for that particular episode. Those two were credited as like special thanks.
Yeah, that was really cool.
And the wine was the episode before that.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't just because of like the wine reference.
Yeah.
And I know Tom King and I can't remember who the artist was on that book. They were both thanked in the special thanks for it too, because there's a lot of like little nods to his Vision run in it. Even like the tie that Vision wears and stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, though, you watched Marvel anime X-Men?
Yeah, so it is a series back in, let me just double check real quick because I can't remember. There was a set of series that came out back in the mid-2010s. Between 2010 and 2011. And there was four series. There was Iron Man, Wolverine, X-Men, and Blade. And they were it was Marvel anime and then the series. Well, in December, Netflix got Wolverine and X-Men on there. So, I decided to watch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I decided to watch X-Men. And, basically I'm watching it out of order because Wolverine came out first. but it's an interesting, like, it's an interesting show. It's maybe about 12 or 13 episodes. The first episode starts off, they're fighting Dark Phoenix. They're fighting Jean as Phoenix. And Jean dies.
Well, that's one hell of a way to start.
Oh, yeah. And Jean dies within the first 5 minutes. Not even. And then there's, like, basically a year time jump where, like, the main core of the X-Men, they're mourning her death, mourning the loss of Jean. And there's a huge influx of mutant abilities start popping up in this region in Japan. So they go and they find this one girl who had powers that were displayed when she was younger, but then never actually came to light until she got older. You might know who she is. Her hero name is Armor.
Yeah.
Yeah, she is the epitome of anime, basically, an anime mutant.
Yeah, she's Japanese in the comic, yeah, too. Or at least, yeah, Japanese American.
She's I read up on her. I believe she's straight up Japanese. But it goes along with that, and they fight the U-Men, and then there's like a midpoint where, like, I don't know, it was good. It was an interesting story. The voice for Professor X was kind of annoying. Not saying it was terrible, but it was just a little too. It was that uncanny valley of too much like 90s X-Men Professor X, but still not enough like it, if you get what I'm saying?
Kind of.
And so, like, it kind of was just like, oh, it just sounds too weird. But the rest of them were all really good. The main cast of X-Men are Cyclops, Beast, Storm, and Logan, as well as Armor and Professor X. And Beast has a dog face. It's adorable. And it's just,
so it's that version of Beast.
Yeah, yeah. He has this, like, strange-looking dog face. It's not, like, a Beast-looking face. He's, like, he just has, like, an actual, like, muzzle and snout.
Dude, if you ever want to just, like, be weirded out, like, Google, like, the different faces of Beast through the years. Because
mm-hmm.
He has had so many, like, changes to his appearance. It's crazy.
Yeah. I'll have to check him out. I will have to look into it. But, oh, shit. I didn't realize that Travis Willingham voiced a couple of people. Steve Bloom, obviously. So, like, Steve Bloom did Wolverine and Logan. Professor X is Cam Clark. I don't really know who that is. Travis Willingham voiced two characters. I don't want to give away anything, so I'm not going to tell you who they are if you ever decide to watch it. But it was an interesting series. It was pretty good. The animation was really cool. The music was nice. And it's just, like, it was... Like, it started off very heavy and different, and it's just, like, a really neat take on, like, the X-Men stories that I may know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I vaguely remember when this stuff came out, but I never watched any at the time.
I know why you never watched them at the time. I know absolutely why. They premiered on G4.
Oh, yeah, no, that's probably why.
Yeah, they all premiered on G4. And there's also two movies, Marvel Disc Wars of the Avengers and Marvel Future Avengers, I believe, is what they are. I'm not sure. No, that's wrong. Those are just other Marvel anime projects. It's Iron Man, Rise of Technovore, and Avengers Confidential, Black Widow, and Punisher. So those came out in 2013 and 2014. But yeah, the X-Men series is pretty good. I'm going to watch the Wolverine and just cross my fingers that Iron Man and Blade eventually do make it onto Netflix.
Okay, I was going to say, I couldn't remember if you said there was an Iron Man one or not. I think I maybe saw, like, not much of, but maybe, like, 10 minutes of the Iron Man one once.
Yeah. So, like, the Iron Man was the first to premiere in 2010, and then Wolverine, then X-Men, and then Blade. So, and I believe on G4, I did watch an episode or two of the Iron Man one, and it's like a different look for Iron Man, and he's in Japan. For some reason, they just decide to keep them, bring them into Japan.
Right. I do actually remember that bit. So I definitely saw enough of it to know that he was in Japan, and I don't remember anything else about it, though.
So it's Tony Stark goes to Japan to produce a new arc reactor power station and showcase the Iron Man Dio, a new prototype armor that will replace him when he retires. That's like the initial plot of the story for that one. But yeah, check it out if you get a chance. It's English voice acting, obviously. It was good. I liked it. You might too, especially if you like anime and Marvel, you probably will like it.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you probably said this and I blanked on it. How long are they?
Less than 15 episodes, 20 minutes long, or less than 30 minutes long.
Okay, so like a average anime.
Yeah, it's basically an average half series anime.
Okay, cool.
Full series, I guess, because 13 episodes are for animes.
Yeah, no, usually like, unless it's like a shonen, they're usually like 13 episodes, and then if they're popular enough, their second season will be 24.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Well, the last thing we have on here is still you rambling. You watched The Terror of Mechagodzilla.
Yes, I watched The Terror of Mechagodzilla. It is the final Godzilla movie in the initial era. There's after this one, there's a 9-year gap before another Godzilla movie. It follows basically shortly after the original Mechagodzilla, the first one, Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla. And it actually references it quite a bit, which isn't something that often happens in these films. Like, they'll reuse, it's funny, they'll reuse footage, but they won't reference previous films. They'll just reuse the footage.
Wait, so they never, like, actually reference, like, the movies before them or anything?
No, not really. King Ghidorah always had a name. After he was introduced the first time, like, they were like, we'll call him King Ghidorah. And from that point on, everyone just always knew him as King Ghidorah, but, like, he straight up died in, Destroy All Monsters. I swear to God, he straight up died. But then he was in two movies later, with Godzilla vs. Gigan. And I'm like, come on. And they don't really reference much, like, I believe, Godzilla vs. Megalon, Godzilla vs. Megalon, they had Gigan in it, but just decided to throw him in it. It wasn't even a, the aliens that follow that worship Megalon, and the aliens that worship, or that were able to summon Gigan were, like, in cahoots. It was just like, oh, the aliens decided to also send Gigan to help destroy the planet. They never really referenced them. They never really talked about the past experiences and even in Godzilla Raids Again, which is the second Godzilla movie. Like, they do reference that this is a new Godzilla, but they don't really talk too much about Godzilla, like the effects that Godzilla left in the previous film. They more so still talked about the nuclear blasts in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, because that's what those movies were more about. But yeah, they never really referenced a previous one until this one, where it's like, oh yeah, Godzilla blew up Mechagodzilla at the end of the movie, and they were searching for his Mechagodzilla's parts in the ocean outside of where he was destroyed. They literally showed the scenes from Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla during the credits rolling in Terror of Mechagodzilla.
That's super weird.
Yeah, it is. It's very, very weird, very interesting. The movie also doesn't really fully make sense, because in Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla, he couldn't even stand up to Mechagodzilla and needed help from King Caesar. In this one, Terror of Mechagodzilla, Godzilla kills two monsters, Mechagodzilla and Gigantosaurus, or I can't remember its actual name. It was a dumb-looking monster. But he kills two monsters with no problem. But in the previous film, he couldn't even stand up to Mechagodzilla. It was kind of disjointed, but also connected. The action scenes and fight scenes were good, and the overarching, human storyline and aliens trying to take over the planet, because that's always what happens in these films after a certain point. After pretty much after Destroy All Monsters, it's always the aliens are trying to take over the planet. That's all it ever is.
And then the aliens just use the monsters as like a weapon?
Yeah, the aliens use the monsters as a weapon. And then Godzilla kills. Like, for this whole era, it's from the point that they introduce aliens on, it is literally the aliens are trying to take over the planet and using the monsters to do so. So that's even earlier than that. It's Invasion of Astro Monster? Or maybe even King Ghidorah, the first one. Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah. It's just always aliens are taking over the planet. I understand why there's a 9-year break, because it was like an overused theme, and like it is starting to get dry. And this one, it was like the whole overall story was okay. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't Kong Gigan bad or Megalon bad, but it was still. It was fine. It was good. It was like middle of the road, and the fight scenes were cool. But that's about it. But it was it's the end of an era, so I did get a little like, oh my god, I finally watched every Godzilla movie from 1954 to 1975, 76.
That's actually an impressive feat.
Yeah. Yeah, because anytime I try to do these movie marathons, minus the Marvel marathon before Endgame came out, anytime I try to do these marathons, I don't stick with it for more than a week or two. Like, I've tried to do it with the Ghibli films, because they're all on HBO Max, and I watched like two of them within 4 weeks, and then I haven't gone back to it. And now, like, this is something that I, like, every Saturday or Sunday, depending on, like, my schedule for the week, every weekend, I look forward to waking up, ordering breakfast, and watching the movie while I'm eating breakfast.
I forget, wasn't there one that you weren't able to watch?
There was one that I wasn't able to watch. It was All Monsters Attack, but from what I hear, it's not good. I'm not really interested in it because it takes place all in the mind of a kid.
Right, right. I remember you talking about that now.
It's because it's supposed, like, the overall story is, like, anti-bullying. That's the message they're trying to fit in, because the kid gets bullied. So then, like, Godzilla's son gets bullied, and it's not good. So, like, I'm not really super interested in watching it. And I'm bummed out because the next movie is, Godzilla Returns, I believe, or The Return of Godzilla, which is 1985. And then the next one after that is Godzilla vs. Biollante, which I cannot find a way to watch it anywhere unless I pay $60 for it. And I ain't down for paying $60 for a movie that came out in 1986, 87, that might not be that good, but it is a movie I really want to watch.
I mean, I would imagine if it's that hard to find, it's probably not that good, which is why there's not a demand to have it available some other way.
Yeah. It's also, distribution is different for that one than it is for the rest of them.
Okay. Well, that'll impact it too.
Yeah. So distribution for, Godzilla vs. Biollante, The Return of Godzilla is Kraken releasing, which I have no idea who the hell that is. And then Godzilla.
The Kraken is the thing under the water.
I know that. I know that. I'm just saying, I don't know the company. But Godzilla vs. Biollante is Miramax, and then the rest of them from King Ghidorah all the way down until Shin Godzilla, which is 1991 to 2004, is Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. And King Ghidorah and Godzilla vs. Mothra are not on Amazon, but then everything from Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2 all the way down to Godzilla Final Wars are on Amazon. Even Shin Godzilla is, I believe, on Amazon, the Funimation one. So I will be, my Godzilla marathon is continuing. I am still going to miss out on one movie, unfortunately. But I still have, let's see, 16 to 32. I still have, is that 16? 16 more films to watch, right?
16 plus 16 is 32.
Yeah, so I still have about 16 more films to watch. Three of them are the shitty Netflix animated ones from 2017 and 18 that I'm now, not really looking forward to.
Do you include, like, the two live-action, like, Hollywood ones in that?
there's
not the
only...
90, not the 97 one. I mean, like the more recent two.
Oh, the legendary ones from 2019 and or from 2014, 2019, Godzilla and King of Monsters.
Holy shit! Was that first one from 2014?
Mm-hmm.
With Bryan Cranston.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah.
Yes.
I would have said that was 2017 at the fucking earliest.
No, 2014. It was five years between Godzilla and King of Monsters. And then it was 19, 20, and 21. Two-ish years between King of Monsters and Godzilla vs. Kong.
Right, because that comes out. I see you put a note on here that it got moved to March.
Yeah, so it got moved up from May to March. So I do not include those in my count because I've watched those multiple times since they've been released.
Okay, that's fair. I wasn't sure if they were part of the marathon. How about the 97 one?
Fuck that, no. No.
That's the best one. It's got fucking...
Like, the thing is, I kind of have to include it, though, as much as I don't want to. So it's a 98 is when it came out, actually, not 97.
It's the only good Godzilla one because it led to the fucking cartoon.
No. But I do kind of have to watch it. And I might, after Godzilla vs. Destoroyah from 95, there's nothing until 99 for Godzilla 2000. Except for the 98 one. But Godzilla Final Wars, which he fights every monster he's ever come in contact with, he also fights Zilla, which is an upright version of the 98 Godzilla. So, unfortunately, technically Zilla is part of canon, and I kind of have to fucking watch that goddamn bullshit.
You definitely do. And you know what? It's going to be the best one on the list.
No, it's not. I don't want
to. But it's got Ferris.
I don't
fucking
want
Matthew Broderickson.
No, I don't want to.
God, Richie, you're the
which
worst.
One were you saying you couldn't find?
Godzilla vs. Biollante.
Okay.
Yeah. Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah and Godzilla vs. Mothra are on... one's on Apple Video, the other one's on Vudu. But I was also able to find them on YouTube, so don't tell anyone that I'm just going to watch them on YouTube instead of on Apple and Vudu. But the rest of them are all on Amazon, so I'll just pay to rent or buy them on it.
Gotcha.
That's fair.
Yeah. So yeah, Godzilla vs. Or Terror of Mechagodzilla? Not the best. Honestly, I feel like Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla, the first one, was better. But yeah, I finished off the Showa era, 1954 to 1975. 21 years of Godzilla watched in 14 weeks because I didn't watch one of them because it's not available.
Which, I mean, that's a lot of movies. And, like, that's a lot of old movies to manage to actually find streaming and watch.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The fact that, like, the only one I couldn't, or the only two I couldn't watch on HBO Max are King Kong vs. Godzilla and All Monsters Attack. It's pretty crazy. Like, the fact that, like, they're all part of the Criterion Collection. So they, like, I could buy that and own that Blu-ray set. And always have these available. And maybe I'll do that sometime down the line when, like, money is definitely no problem. But for now, I have them on streaming. I don't need to own them any other.
Yeah, and, owning one of those sets would certainly be cool. But when are you going to watch all those movies again?
Yeah, exactly. Like, maybe after I get done with this 37, I guess, because of fucking Godzilla 1998. This 37-movie marathon. I'll probably start, like, I probably will try to do the Ghibli marathon, or I've been actually wanting to do Star Wars, because I've never actually really marathoned or watched them in a nice consecutive order. It's been a long time since I watched any Star Wars in general.
Now, what order would you watch them?
4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 7, 8, 9.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
I would also accept Machete Order.
No. I think I've heard Machete Order. I don't really... Machete Order is like 4-1.
I forget the exact order for it, but it basically sets it up where if you were to have never seen Star Wars before, you could watch it in a pseudo chronological order, without having anything spoiled for you.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's like 1-2, 4-5-3-6-7-8-9 or something like that.
Yeah, like, it's something in where, like, you basically end up watching, like, at least one of the prequels, almost like a flashback after learning that Luke is Vader's child.
It's 4-5-2-3-6.
There you go.
And don't watch episode one, because...
Yeah, like, episode one doesn't really add anything, like, because you figure it jumps 10 years between episode 1 and 2. So, like, Anakin is just a Jedi by the time episode 2 rolls around.
Yeah.
Everything else you can kind of just assume.
But no, I would do a release order.
Yeah, I mean, that's the right way to do it. I was just curious.
I mean, I might include Solo and Rogue One in that, because I actually have never watched Solo. So I might include Solo and Rogue One in that and do, like, Solo, Rogue One, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 7, 8, 9.
No, I think if you're going to do it, I think you should actually watch it in release order.
Yeah.
This way, like, you can see, like, Solo after seeing the entire life of Han Solo.
Yeah, true. Makes sense.
But Solo was actually, a good movie. Like, I mean, good is subjective, obviously, but, like, I enjoyed Solo a lot. Like, yeah. I like Solo better than the sequels.
Yeah. I've heard it's decent, so.
It's a shame. It kind of had all those production issues, and then because they were just shoving out too many of these movies too close together, like, a lot of people just skipped it. And yeah. it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But I think that is a show, unless either of you guys have anything else.
Just real quick, this weekend I'm watching The Return of Godzilla. It's the 1984 one. And I'm looking at the wiki, and the monster he fights is Shockerus, giant sea lice.
Oh, Jesus.
Also, Rich, in case you missed it, Drew sent us a link, apparently, that you might be able to watch the one that you can't find phone.
I think that I feel like I saw that when I was looking and was unsure if about that site, but I will check it out.
Archive.org is the Internet Archive. Like, they are super legit.
They archive everything.
Yeah, they have lots of, like, DOS games backed up. It, like, I mean, you know, whether or not it's the necessarily most legal thing in the world, really, I don't know. Like, that's gray area, but, like, it's a legit website.
Yeah. I'll check it out.
Yeah, I mean, it might not be the best quality, but at least you'd be able to watch the movie and know what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like you can download it from as well to probably get better quality. So mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It also looks like they have, like, all of them, maybe. Like, I just happened to search Godzilla versus Vigilante streaming it was one of the first things there. So.
Yeah.
So I think what we've learned is, Rich, Drew is much better at searching for things than you are.
My Google foo isn't that good. I know that.
I mean, I searched the most basic ass thing you could have fucking searched.
No, like I said, I remember seeing, like, the Internet Archive. I was just, like, second guessing it or just, like, cautious Fair. About it because I've never seen that. Yeah. I've never, like, seen that site before.
Which is kind of crazy because it's the fucking Internet Archive. I thought everybody knew about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't know that they had fucking movies archived up there.
Actually,
yeah.
I did not know they archived movies either, but what? I just meant Richie saying that he wasn't sure if it was, like, safe.
Yeah.
Well, Rich, have you ever heard of the Wayback Machine?
I don't know.
It's the thing that you can go plug in a website and go see what that website looked like 15 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's the Internet Archive. They run that.
You can go and look up Brendan Fraser's. No, I think that website's still up. The Mummy movie website.
Yeah, but, like, you could go to, like Google, and you could search Google on there and see what it looked like in 1999, where it basically looked the same with a few less things on the screen.
Yeah, yeah. I have heard about that. I've never actually, like, gone to it. I don't think.
Man, you had a weird internet experience in the mid to late 2000s, huh?
Yeah, when you have to share a single computer with two siblings and two parents, and your two parents are always playing bingo, but they're not putting money on it, you kind of don't really get to go into the internet a lot.
Right, and you're the middle child, so nobody loved you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Forgot about that. Yeah. All right, well, you guys have anything else you want to talk about before we wrap up?
No.
No, I'm
not
good.
This week.
Cool. Well, in that case, That was the episode. If you'd like to find more of our content, you can head over to www.one-quest.com. We actually, I just actually did an interview on Monday with artist Jason Lennox. He's got a Kickstarter that's launching on Saturday. So if you want to hear, you know, somebody talk about making comics, go check that out. It's on our podcast feeds. You can also support us, though, by heading over to patreon.com/onequest. If you can't support us there with dollars, you can go to your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or Amazon Music, all those fun places. Subscribe to us, rate us, review us, like us. All those things help a whole bunch. You can go to social media and find us, facebook.com/onequestonline or at 1_quest on Instagram and Twitter. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/onequestvideo, and you can always send us an email to social@onequest.com. Otherwise, we'll be back next week with something else to talk about. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.